Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Monday. We're thrilled that you're here. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder bringing you another week of broadcasting. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call us out on something. How was your week?
Why do you start out
I don't know. People might want to call us out on something. I was reading on our Facebook page the other day. We had on this guy, an Australian man, who was talking about the downfall of America. He was explaining how when there's gun violence in Australia, they do something about it. But here in America, instead of doing something about the gun violence, we try to figure out what we should do about our cell phones instead of the gun violence. And I thought he was very articulate and did a great job. This was last week. And then on our Facebook page, a guy kept saying, tell that guy to go back to England.
All right, first of all, not England.
He was not from England. He was from Australia.
Second of all, what they did was there was a massacre with an automatic weapon in the 80s, was it?
No, the 90s.
Okay,
96, I want to say. 35 people died.
It was a big thing, and their government banned all assault weapons.
Right, right.
And I don't know, aren't we trying to do that?
Well,
no,
not really, no. And if we are, it's the best kept secret in America.
Because I hear it frequently, like, we've got to put a ban on...
It's just the opposite. In fact, the gun laws... even in the wake of mass shootings, are lessened as a defense for mass shootings,
right.
Saying that if more people have guns, these shootings won't happen.
Right. I also want to point out, along those same lines, and then everything else will be happy. I was listening to our friend Brian Noonan over the weekend. Brian was doing a great show, and Brian was talking about Donald Trump, as many of us do, and he was trying to figure out the phenomena that is Donald Trump. Because really, if you step back, it doesn't make sense.
No. Nope.
It just doesn't. And things get crazier and crazier, including, and I know we'll talk about it today, his refusal to disavow an endorsement from the KKK and from David Duke. He doesn't know who David Duke is.
I don't know anything about this guy, David Duke, you mentioned.
It's so frustrating.
Really? Because babies know who David Duke is.
He wrote a New York Times piece about David Duke, or referred to him by name in the year 2000.
He did. About him not wanting to join a party that David Duke was a part of. I know.
There were nut jobs like David Duke, who I've never heard of.
I don't know who this David Duke is.
All right, so I was listening to Brian Noonan here on WGN over the weekend, and he asked people what they see. What could you possibly see in Donald Trump? Because the whole thing is so confounding. What could you possibly see? And this lady called up, this very, very sweet-sounding lady, and she said, what I like about Donald Trump is, here's what I like about Donald Trump, she says, I think he has a good heart.
What?
And I think he does, too, in a shoebox under his bed. I think he took somebody's heart out of their stomach, out of their chest cavity, put it in a shoebox.
It's a perfectly good heart.
You know what? That's the only thing that he does not have for sure.
I know, but doesn't it show you, like, as I'm listening, and my car, I don't do sound effects, I'm not Michael Winslow from Police Academy, but my car made those screechy noises. I'm driving a lot of... making all kinds of screechy noises, and I'm trying to get control of the car. But I thought, that's what happens, is we're all so different. Everybody sees and thinks and feels differently, and I think that's a good thing.
It is good.
It is, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know anybody who would say, yeah, the reason Donald Trump has my vote is that guy has a good heart.
See, I would have liked to have heard why, some kind of, for instance...
Right.
Some IE.
Right.
Colon.
The people who say what I like about him is he just says stuff, I give them credit because that's what he does. He just stands up there and he just says stuff.
He's shaking it up. That's what I like.
Right.
I do. I really do.
You can give him points for that, but I don't think you can find
heart?
A cardiologist anywhere on the planet who would look at Donald Trump's heart and go, that's a good one. We got a good heart right here.
Well, maybe physically it's good. But not emotionally.
Right.
As somebody who's just going to take his ball and go home is not someone with a good heart.
Right. He is the president that will take his ball and go home.
Absolutely.
That's what the bumper sticker should read. A picture of a ball and Donald Trump grabbing at the ball and heading towards his gigantic apartment.
And you know what else, Bill? People have said, you know, because I said, I respect the office of president.
As do I.
I know you do. And
I do.
Whoever's in there... you know, I respect the office, maybe not the person, but we're all in the same boat. So when George W. was in there, I didn't vote for him.
Right.
But, you know, I tried to see some good points, and I mean, he was the president.
Yeah. Yeah.
So somebody said, okay, so what if Donald Trump gets in there? Are you going to respect the office? I am. I'm going to be puzzled.
And scared.
I am going to be scared.
I'm going to be very scared.
I really am.
I know.
Just, you know, God, I just can't. I keep thinking of the foreign policy. That's what scares me
the most. Me too.
To have him representing us.
Me too.
That's what, you know, you always want somebody good representing. If you watched The Walking Dead last night, they were talking to another group of people, and they sent in Maggie, who's beautiful and lovely, and she was like the negotiator. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would be proud of, to send Maggie in. But when you're sending, you know, Donald Trump as your representative, that's not representing us very well.
I keep thinking that there's so many world leaders right now, like Kim Jong-un, like Vladimir Putin. There's a couple guys around the planet that don't play games. And the diplomacy that other candidates could bring to the office, I think Donald Trump is lacking. I mean, you see this every time he speaks somewhere and somebody says or does something he doesn't agree with, you see this angrier version.
Ah, shut up. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're stupid.
I don't know that that plays
with... Who's David Duke?
I don't know that that plays with guys that have missile capability, you know? That's where I'm getting a little nervous.
I know.
So...
Since you're talking about leadership, and can I just tell you something
sure.
that's really getting a lot of attention on social media right now?
Yeah.
And I'll refer to the Washington Post, so it's not political in any way. Justice Clarence Thomas spoke at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Ending what they think is a 7-year silence.
Oh.
You know, Thomas never asked the question, and he spoke, and literally they're saying it's the first time in 7 years that he has spoken during oral arguments. Now, it's interesting because it comes just after Antonin Scalia's death. I don't know if there's a relationship there at
all.
Does
it say, Steve, what he spoke on? What did he talk about?
Yes, this is what you're going to love. I'm reading from the Post. Thomas seemed to be making a lighthearted joke about lawyers trained at his alma mater, Yale Law School, or its rival Harvard. The Ivy League is often a Thomas target. But several justices were speaking and laughing at the time, and Thomas's exact comments apparently are lost to history. So he spoke from the bench for the first time in 7 years, but no one heard what he said.
What's with that?
How can that be? And the Twitter sphere is lighting up with it.
Wasn't there a time where people wondered if everything was okay with him, with his verbal skills, because they just hadn't heard him speak in so long?
I don't know. He's just, you know, he just doesn't.
Why?
He just doesn't.
Chooses not to. Yeah. He's a listener. He sits back and listens and nods and, you know,
deliberates.
Yeah. Just not into the speaking part of it.
He should be on Windy City Live.
He doesn't nod and smile.
Oh.
He just doesn't speak. The people on Windy City Live just nod and smile the whole time. That's
You've
a good
sucked
hour.
Me into
That's a good
ripping
hour
that
TV.
Show and I never
let's,
even watched
let's
it.
Let's do an hour of TV where everyone just keeps nodding and smiling. That'll work. All right, let's take a quick break. We have a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, for the past few months, we've all been waiting anxiously to see how the Academy Award presentation, most notably Chris Rock, handles the situation of it being an all-white telecast, all-white nominees for Best Actor, Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress. You saw the show last night, right?
It was different this year, but Chris Rock was fantastic.
I thought so, too.
And it was, you know, you knew he was going to spend a lot of time on the whole diversity thing.
Yeah.
And some people that I've seen on Facebook say it was overkill and, boy, it makes me feel ashamed to be white. Really? I thought it was necessary because this has been such a huge discussion
sure.
for so long.
Sure.
And, boy, did he play it right.
He's really good. I mean, he really is.
Except he sounds like he's a 10-year-old kid who hasn't hit puberty yet.
That's why I love him so much.
You know what? It speaks to what a good movie or what a good book does, because that opening monologue to me, it you know, made jokes, it
yep.
poked fun, but it provided absolute perspective
yep.
and made a very relevant point. I mean, he did it all.
Boy, he did, didn't he?
If you didn't hear it, can we play a little of it?
Yeah.
And we can start and stop, but
sure.
We have it ready for, in case you missed it, because some people forgot it was Oscar night.
Right.
Here's Chris right. Rock.
From your host, Chris Rock.
Hey, 15 black people on that montage. Hey! Well, I'm here at the Academy Awards, otherwise known as the White People's Choice Awards. You realize if they nominated Host, I wouldn't even get this job. Should y'all be watching Neil Patrick Harris right now? But here's the crazy thing. This is the wildest, craziest Oscars to ever host, because we got all this controversy. No black nominees, you know? And people are like, Chris, you should boycott. Chris, you should quit. You should quit. You know, how come it's only unemployed people that tell you to quit something, you know? No one with a job ever tells you to quit. So I thought about quitting. I thought about it real hard. But I realized they're going to have the Oscars anyway. They're not going to cancel the Oscars because I quit, you know? And the last thing I need is to lose another job to Kevin Hart, okay? I don't need that. Kev right there. Kev make movies fast. Every month. Porno stars don't make movies that fast. Now, the thing is, why are we protesting? That's the big question. Why this Oscars? Why this Oscars? You know, it's the 88th Academy Awards. It's the 88th Academy Awards, which means this whole no black nominees thing has happened at least 71 other times. Okay? You gotta figure that it happened in the 50s, in the 60s. You know, like, you know, in the 60s, one of those years, Sydney didn't put out a movie. I'm sure there were no black nominees some of those years, say 62 or 63. And black people did not protest. Why? Because we had real things to protest at the time. You know? Too busy being raped and lynched to care about who won best cinematographer. You know, when your grandmother's swinging from a tree, it's really hard to care about best documentary foreign short.
Wow.
All right, look at how masterful, as Steve pointed out, he is. He's so comfortable. It's really hard to do jokes about raping and lynching and get away with it and get big laughs.
I know.
But everything he said had a beautiful ring of truth to it.
It was just perfect.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Well, the thing is, they weren't jokes. I mean, they were truisms. Well, they were statements, too. Yeah. They were like, look where we are. Look, you know, this is not a minor thing that we're facing now, but it's a trivial thing when you look at us historically.
You know what? I was thinking last night. Now, they had named Chris Rock as host of the show before the nominees were announced, and we found out that all the nominees were white again. So the timing of it was perfect. But last night as I was watching, I was thinking to myself, what a stroke of luck for everybody involved that he was hosting, because I can't think of anybody that could have done as good of a job with this topic as he did last night. Can you?
No. He really nailed it, and it wouldn't have worked coming from a white person.
No.
And, you know, here's what you get, 847. I thought you're nominated because of your performance, not race, ethnicity, etc. Someone else, if we don't want to be judged by the color of our skin, quit slapping us in the face with it. That's the one side that you get.
Yeah, I know.
You know what else is weird? Remember when we were talking, I asked you how come there aren't separate categories, like maybe there should be a black category. He brought that up.
Right.
I mean, and in order for someone to be nominated, you have to have the black category. Like there's a men category and a women category. We talked about this on the air.
Yeah, we did.
And really, it is the best performance that it goes to.
You know, even more telling is later on in the show, Chris Rock went to a movie theater in Compton and
talked to
it was brilliant.
A bunch of black filmgoers, and you really realize that the world of movies is very different for black people and for white people.
And that's why they've made the changes, and the president of the Academy, who is black and a woman, came out and said that there's going to be some changes, and it's very important.
Right.
And not just with the movies and stuff, it's with the way they're voted, because a 65-year-old white man is going to see a movie and think about it differently than younger person.
But even deeper than that, Wendy, I think that Compton thing just shows it's not relevant to so many people, the Oscars. You know, yeah. we think it's the be-all and end-all. It's not relevant to so many people. And what I've been saying to you guys through all of these campaigns is how interesting it is how the people in Iowa are different from New Hampshire,
exactly.
from
yep.
South Carolina. And look at the people outside that movie theater.
Yeah.
You know, the woman, what was the movie, Spotlight? Or
Yeah, never heard of it.
Bridge of Spies, it was.
Never heard
she
of
said,
it.
And she said, what is that?
Is that a British movie?
Yes, you know? That was so funny.
She's just as American and part of this culture as the rest of us.
Right.
It's not relevant to her.
Right.
I didn't see the movies that were up for the awards yet. I plan to.
You'd heard of them, though.
Some of them, but some of them took me by surprise, I have to be honest with you. I guess I have heard of them just because what I do for a living. But if I was just working not in the media,
right.
I don't know if I'd know.
Right.
I just saw Mad Max for the first time this weekend.
Weekend. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm late, you know? There are people that don't go to the movies.
You're early now because there's going to be a big rush to see it.
Oh, my God, is that good.
It is good. All right, we're going to take a break. We have a lot more show. Later on, we'll cover... There was a joke during the monologue that I think may be the best joke that's ever been told on the Academy Awards. We didn't play it in the earlier snippets, but we'll play it later on. The most perfectly crafted, well-worded, best-delivered joke I think I've ever heard, and that includes all the Billy Crystal years and the Steve Martin years and the Johnny Carson years. We'll get to that later. Also, a glaring omission left out... During the In Memoriam segment, they left out somebody that's very upsetting that they should not have left out. We'll tell you what that is later on, too. Stick around. Big show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I say always take the Heimlich. If somebody offers, even if I'm not joking, I'll be somewhere and I'll see somebody and I'll go, yeah, I'll take the Heimlich.
It could change your life. And
it
you
has.
Know what else could change your life?
What's this?
A password.
How so?
All right. First of all, when I signed onto this computer in this very studio today, it said your password is expiring in 30 seconds.
Oh, in 30 seconds?
Well, I've been ignoring it for the last 5 days.
Oh.
Consider changing your password. And I don't know if other people are like this, but if you have Microsoft Exchange, the server is configured to ask all the employees in your place of business every 30 days to change your password.
Yeah.
Now, we are lucky because we can just use the same password and change the numerical value at the end of it.
Sure.
But sometimes it gets pretty annoying. A lot of times you have to use one uppercase character, one lowercase alphabetic character, one symbol, and one number, and it can't be less than 8 characters, and you can't use any of the same passwords that you've used in the last 3 months in some cases.
Right.
So here is a guy that we're going to meet right now, Mauricio Estrella, and he has actually taken this annoying password change situation and turned it around to change his life for the better. Hi, Mauricio.
Hi. Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're really good. Read your story today.com, and I was so impressed because, you know, really passwords are a nuisance. I was just whining to Bill last week. I don't know which passwords I've used for which ones, and I always forget them. But you did something different. Why don't you explain what you did with your expiring password?
Yeah, sure. So I, as you explained, it was one of those mornings where the last thing on my head was what's my next password going to be? And most people don't really take it like, you know, as serious as a password should be. I had colleagues like writing their passwords on post-it notes and having them next to the displays. So that defeated the whole purpose.
Exactly.
Exactly. And now I had like, you know, a minute to come up with a password that I was going to forget right away. So I took that opportunity to do something that I felt that I needed to do. I was going through a divorce. I was in the middle of some, you know, depression and personal situations that I needed to amend. So my first revelation to this was changing my password to forgive her. You know, forgive her with a uppercase F and maybe replacing the E with a 3, for example, and adding a couple of extra symbols there. So it would still comply with all the security requirements per se, but it could just make it more personal. And
you had to type that in every day for 30 days going through the emotional battle of a divorce, and you're probably mad at her, you're heartbroken, so you type that in every day for 30 days, forgive her. Did it work?
Yeah, it actually started making an impact because, you know, what happens is that in its essence, passwords are... they grant you access to very little things. Maybe it's your email, maybe it's a file you need to send, it's your calendar. So each time you type this little reminder, this affirmation, that micro achievement kind of validates your effort towards something. So it's this little emotional feedback you get once you say, I forgive her, and then you get that little response of something that happens and gets done. It creates some sort of like a mantra. And if you just privately repeat and talk to yourself as you type it, it has this little, I would say, I don't know, magical, maybe that's the word, this power to really help you see things differently. Right?
Well, it inspires you. Inspiration.
Oh, sure. Mauricio, did you feel this forgiveness happening gradually, or was there just one day that was a turning point that, like, midway through you just went, you know what, I've been typing this for a couple of weeks, I do forgive her?
Yeah, I mean, it was like a gradient, I could say. I mean, it wasn't something like immediate, evidently. I mean, the personal side of things was far more complex than a password, obviously. And there's no shortcuts to it sometimes, but just keeping a positive attitude on it and just reminding yourself privately that is your focus right on the next couple of weeks. It really helps. It took some time, obviously, but the positive impact of it in my attitude, in my mood, it really changed quite drastically, I would say. It took, a couple of weeks, maybe.
Oh, that's fast.
I noticed that.
Good.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about meditation, which now I think they kind of call mindfulness, or maybe they're two separate things, mm-hmm. but you're trying to inspire yourself to be a better person every day. And you did this with the forgive her, to forgive her for the marriage that fizzled. Sorry to put it bluntly, but that's what happened. So 30 days later, what happened? The password expired. What was your next inspirational mm-hmm. password?
Well, the next one, I had tried to quit smoking for some time. I used, you know, like nicotine patches and the electronic cigarettes and whatnot, but nothing really did seem to work, but I started using the password quit smoking forever. And believe it or not, I haven't smoked since I used that password.
Wow.
Seriously?
It was really tough, but there's something so powerful about reminding yourself. Once you understand what you need to change in order to move forward and change something for good, it really depends mostly on the attitude you put towards it, and it really helps.
Well, you know what else, Mauricio, is you have a great personality for this. I bet there's some people who after a couple of days would just go, I'm not going to forgive my ex-wife, I'm not going to quit smoking, but you believed in it, you didn't give up.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on how you see them, because they can become something that is almost like a Like when you park your car in your garage, at the beginning, maybe if you just got a new car, you need to understand the dimensions of it, so you understand, you know, how the car fits into your garage.
Right.
But as you do it every day, it becomes an automatic thing, and passwords happen to do the same. After a few hours, maybe, most people will just type. Mechanically, you will just remember the combination of keystrokes, and that's it. But if somehow you force yourself to be a little more considerate when you type it, and you know, really put your energy and your effort into taking this thought, it can stay with you. I mean, obviously, I would lie if I tell it worked every time, because I tried many things, you know, as monthly reminders and mantras. Some of them have worked, some of them haven't. But it's all in how much passion, I would say, and belief you put into,
yep.
into your own desires to change.
They say it takes 21 days to create a habit, so you had 21 plus 9 to help instill that new habit and the good things. But now you write for the Huffington Post, creative director at Imagination. I don't know what Imagination is. You're also a professor, and you've done some talks at TED. So it's you have an advantage, I feel, than just your average person, but I guess it's worth a try.
Yeah, I mean, actually, a lot of my exposure to writing. Actually, I started writing for the Huffington Post after my article with the password. I gave a TEDx talk based on my password story. So a lot of things have happened after my exposure to the world through that piece I wrote. But before that, I was just a depressed guy that had a circle of friends that didn't understand me, and I just tried to find, you know, meaningful things that kept me happy, but I couldn't. So I feel like there's a lot of people that might be going through similar things. And I might not have the answer for everything, but I think focusing on the very first thing you should do.
That was focusing, by the way. Everybody just panicked that you swore. Where are we talking to you from? Because you've Skyped in today.
Yeah, I'm Skyping. I am in Shanghai. I live in China right now.
Oh, interesting. Have you met any nice new women?
Yeah, I actually got engaged exactly 1 year and a half after I found a beautiful lady. One of my passwords was actually to ask her out.
Is this adorable? God, you go from depressed guy to engaged guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
All right. So what else? You've forgiven your ex-wife. You've quit smoking.
Yeah. Found a new wife.
Yes. Yeah, so what's next?
So I remember I used it to save money, for example. So I was reminding myself to save certain amount every week. Because something nice about the password is that if you add a little number, a little metric, it's easier to measure whether you're putting enough effort or not. For example, if I say, you know, save $20 a week. That way you know if you're actually doing it or not. I use, for example, to try to lose weight, I try to keep control on, you know, how many calories I burn per week, per se. Right? So I was like, you know, burn, I don't know, 4,000 calories a week. Burn 4K a week. Burn,
yeah, but wait, you one of the passwords you used, eat 2 times a day, it never worked, did it?
Yeah, that didn't work because I didn't inform myself on how it should.
Now, Mauricio, Wendy's password is similar to that. Hers is bite me. That seems angry to me. Doesn't that seem angry to you?
No, it could be sexual. It could be eating. It could be anything.
That just seems angry.
Yeah. No, I know. So the one we'd eat 2 times a day, in my head, I thought, well, people eat 3 times a day. If I eat 2 times a day, I'm going to lose weight. But that's not how it works. I mean, it's not as simple as that. It actually happens the opposite. There's a lot of reasons why that's actually not a good thing to do, but I didn't know. So, I mean, I'm still on my way, in theory, to become the one I want to be, right? I've been in this on and off for quite some time now. And some of them worked, some of them didn't. For example, I tried to quit the, you know, drinking socially. I'm a social drinker. Once in a while, you go out, you have a couple of beers, you have a glass of wine with a friend or something. And I tried to stop doing that for a few months to see if I could, and I did it. I use passwords to remind myself to write, for example, every week, or remind myself to take one photo every day. I've used a combination of things over the last 2 years that have given me good and bad results on and on.
Well, keep it up. We have a bunch of listeners texting in saying that they've been doing this for a while. There's a woman who says her husband puts "I love winter" to get him through the hump of the Chicago winter.
Oh, nice!
And the sweetest one you've done is FaceTime to mom on Sunday, and it worked. You talk with your mom every week, don't you?
Yeah.
Isn't that sweet?
I still talk to her every week. Yeah.
Well,
easy to lose touch with people we love sometimes because of the distance. That kind of helped.
Mauricio, you've really done some good things here, all very positive, and it's just because of passwords. Great. That's great news.
Thank you. Yeah.
You've inspired me. I got to change my password in the next 10 seconds, and I'm going to put try to be nicer. That's
Put that in there.
Oh, I just gave my password away.
That's fine.
Plus, it'll never work. Thank you so much, and we'll be looking for you on Huffington Post, and maybe you'll have another TED Talk. Keep it positive.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mauricio. Take care.
Mauricio Estrella. What a lovely way to change your life for the better.
Yeah, very
nice. Be nicer to Bill.
Put that in there. Just put that in there.
That's my new password.
A new password. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We were talking to Mauricio Estrella, university professor, writer at Huffington Post. He did a TED Talk about changing your password and inspiring yourself. And a bunch of listeners do that all the time.
Everyone's already doing it?
Yeah, 815. Oh, my goodness. This is what I do to stay more positive. 630, many of this man's suggestions are supported by CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is routinely used in treating depression and anxiety. Obviously, this is something we can all benefit from. Great guest.
Yeah, just the reinforcement of a positive message. That's CBT. Yeah, of
course. Holy cow, says 815. Father Guido Sarducci divorced and quit smoking? He did a little
That was not Father Guido Sarducci. He can't get married. He's a priest.
630, yes, I've been using password phrases for the last few years. Combining passwords with your daily affirmations is a great idea.
Ah.
And then 312, Wendy, just let everyone interested in hacking WGN know their internal security protocol. I did not.
I don't think you did.
It's, you know, pretty tough around here.
Yes.
Also, some tips for added security, says Mauricio. Try to be a bit more complex with the words, like add symbols or numbers or scramble it a bit at the beginning or ending of your password string. Like if you're going to do safety first, he suggests doing a capital S, the number 4 for an A.
Oh.
And then... He uses a 3 for an E. So
sure.
You can do it that way. First, he spells F, number 1, R-S-T. So you can definitely scramble things up a bit. It'll be like a junior jumble.
I would forget my password the second day. Every new password, I'm out on the second day.
I already do, and I was trying to log into an account to pay a bill, and you could not use a password that you've previously used.
Right.
But I have, like, I know. 5 of them that I go back to, but... So then you have to come up with a new one, and then every time you go to sign into that account again, you're like, oh, God, what did I use now?
Right. I always base my password on whatever's happening at the moment. Like, if Dave Ennett's in the office, I'll put Dave Ennett's here. That's my password. So then I need him to be there every day, or I don't know what my password is.
Well, you should sign on at the same time every day when Dave Ennett is here.
That's a good idea.
Dave's not here. That should be your password.
I will use that as my next password. All right, a break and then a lot more show. News is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve.
A little premature there, Kevin.
That happens.
Steve left a little space.
Yeah.
Can we talk more Oscars?
Yeah, absolutely.
I really loved what Chris Rock did, and as we were discussing earlier, one of the best hosts that could have happened to us.
I don't know. All the stars lined up properly because of the controversy of there not being any black nominees for the acting categories, male and female. Chris Rock had already been picked as host, and he did a great job. We think, you and I think. I know I've been reading some texts. Some people thought it was overkill. Most of the monologue, I'd say easily 90% of the monologue, was about the fact that there wasn't much diversity in terms of the nominees. He made fun of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. He did a really nice job on skewering them a little bit, and they're deciding to boycott the Academy Awards.
And, of course, Jada was the one who was announced she was boycotting it first, so Will had to.
Right.
You can't go against your wife.
Right. Not with something
she
like
ruined
that.
It for him.
Right. Right.
But Chris Rock had a little something to mention about the Jada Pinkett Smiths.
Yeah. What happened? People went mad. You know? Spike got mad. And Jonathan got mad. And Jada went mad. And Will went mad. Everybody went mad. You know? It's quite like Jada got mad. Jada says she's not coming. Protesting. I'm like, is she on a TV show? Jada's going to boycott the Oscars. Jada boycotting the Oscars is like me boycotting Rihanna's panties. I wasn't invited. Oh, that's not an invitation I would turn down.
All right, so I said to you, I imagine because Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith are very outspoken, I imagine there will be some comment from one or both of them at some point today. I don't know if it'll be positive or negative.
I'm sure it already was tweeted out.
Has it been? Yeah.
Because you think that was a brave move on his part.
Yeah.
Spike Lee got the Achievement Award, one of the three.
Right.
With Debbie Reynolds and Gina Rollins.
Right.
And so Spike boycotting it was really to his own disadvantage.
I guess so. I imagine. Now, there was a joke last night. I mentioned this earlier. We didn't play the joke for you yet, but I'll explain. I think this is, if not the best joke that's ever been said in an Academy Awards, it's certainly among them. Now, I want you to listen not just to the joke, but pay very close attention to the reaction that it gets from the audience afterwards, because to me, it's a very rare joke that can make you feel not just one, but several emotions, and you can hear it from the audience. You'll hear them after the joke. You'll hear them respond favorably for the most part, and then a couple seconds later, that favorable response will make a complete 180-degree spin. So here's a joke from last night where Chris Rock takes out not just one, but two topics with one quick stone. Listen to this.
Things, you know, this year the Oscars, things are going to be a little different. Things are going to be a little different at the Oscars. This year, in the in memoriam package, it's just going to be black people that were shot by the cops on their way to the movies.
All right, so you
that
heard
went
it
full
right?
circle. It was like a laugh, a groan back to applause.
It was first instinct, boy, is that funny. Second instinct, hey, don't say that.
We shouldn't be laughing at that.
Yeah, that's really funny. He took out the fact that there's little diversity at the Academy Awards and the fact that a lot of black people get killed by cops. He did it all in one fell swoop and did a great job. That was a really funny joke.
It was a funny joke, although I am the one that did the same thing. I went, although I think I groaned first. I think I went, oh.
Did you?
And then it's like, that's kind of funny. I mean, what this is supposed to do. You're supposed to laugh about things so you learn from them and it comes to the surface.
Right. Both of those topics, especially people getting shot by police and killed, it's not the kind of fodder you would usually use as comedy material. But a testament to Chris Rock and how masterful he can be, and he was last night, I think, and you think, is that he took two topics that really aren't that nice and made them into something funny. And that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. So
he did a fantastic job.
He really did.
Although sometimes he's hard to understand. Those big ass teeth get in the way. I'm sorry. Sometimes, and you know what?
He had
to repeat a couple of things because it's like it's hard to understand him sometimes.
I don't have a hard time understanding him. I always understand him. You really don't?
And he repeated a couple of times.
Did he? Yeah.
When he was setting up the joke. I know you're doing it to make a point, but it's like he kind of stumbled on the line a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he's fantastic, but he's got big teeth.
I don't know who else they could have got last night to be more
John
timely.
Elway.
If they were looking for, I guess if they were looking for guys with big teeth, they could have. He brought the whole thing around beautifully. The segment earlier, people had texted and wanted us to explain a little bit. Toward the middle, he did a thing where he was at a movie theater in Compton. They had already shot this. And he was getting reaction from a predominantly black audience. There was only one white person I remember that he talked to very briefly. And what it was to set up the fact that the white viewing audience in the world of motion pictures and the black viewing audience have very different interests. And they do. And I think that was well illustrated yesterday, don't you?
In a nutshell, he was asking about the Oscar-nominated pictures, white pictures, if you will. And the black people interviewed were like, is that really a movie? I never even heard of
it.
And then Chris went on to say, did you see Straight Outta Compton? And they all said yes.
Right.
But you don't think that was completely set up?
Only set up in the... I don't think the answers were set up.
I feel like they were because these just people on the street were so funny.
Well, there was one guy. There was a guy of, I would say, about 60 or 65, and Chris Rock said to him, what's your favorite movie of all time? And his answer was Superfly.
I remember the Superfly guy.
There's not a white person on the planet that would put Superfly in their top 1,000 movies. It was an interesting movie, but it's nobody's favorite movie. But that guy said it was such conviction. Superfly, that's the best movie of all time.
Well, Curtis Mayfield was pretty cool.
I guess.
But no, I don't think that guy was set up.
No.
But I mean, the other ones I kind of
think they were?
A little bit.
I don't know.
Still funny.
Oh yeah, it was very
funny. But I felt like they were coached a bit.
But I think it said what we needed to hear, which is realize the fact that culturally there's a difference going on.
Huge.
There really is.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
We have something that I thought was a beautiful moment and I forgot to bring it up, quite honestly. Hey Liz.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Speaking of big teeth, there was a picture with Joe Biden and Lady Gaga after the show.
Yeah.
And Lady Gaga, I looked it up. She's 5'1". She's teeny, tiny, little person. And in this picture, she's taller than Joe Biden.
Oh, how could that be?
Was she standing on her piano bench, or did she have platforms that big?
That was my question. Because I went back and I looked. This is how bad I am. I went back and I looked at her picture of her dress slash pants. You know, that white outfit?
Yeah.
And I couldn't see what her shoes looked like. But she's sort of famous for her platform.
Right.
But come on. Is she 6 foot tall?
Those are big shoes. I think Elton John wore those in Tommy.
Well,
remember those?
Even better. At some point, did Chris Rock bring out the little stool?
Yeah, for the little boy from Room.
But he was still too far from the microphone. That was driving me nuts as an audio girl. That was driving me crazy. And Lady Gaga's performance was amazing. And just the stage full of sexual assault victims that walked out.
Very powerful.
Very brave.
It was really fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyone can make fun of her. Go ahead. But you can't make fun of her voice. That woman is amazing.
Well, not only did she sing that song, she was almost acting that song out. You could see it in her face. She was more than singing. That was such a touching moment. People were upset that didn't win as the best song of the year. It's not the kind of song you go around humming and dancing to. I mean, it's a very, very sad, sad song.
And lyrically, there weren't a lot of lyrics, of repeated. But, I mean, it's beautiful and it was touching.
What a moment.
Maybe not an award winner.
Right, right.
All right, I'll check that out, Liz. A photo of Lady Gaga with Joe Biden, who did a great job.
Yeah.
I was hoping that he would say, all right, that's it. I see the turmoil the world is in. I'm running for president.
Several people speculated as to whether or not you'd see that, but he was just there to set up the importance of that moment, and it was. It was one of the most really awe-inspiring moments of the whole broadcast. It was really beautiful. They cut to the audience after the song, and you saw your Hollywood A-listers all in tears.
It was pretty great.
Yeah, it was great.
Although I also liked the Girl Scout cookies.
That was pretty funny. All right. They left somebody out of the in memoriam section, somebody extremely important,
travesty.
And it's not good. It is a travesty. We'll talk about that next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings, learn to fly. All your life, you were on waiting for this moment to arrive.
This is from last night's Oscar telecast. This is Dave Grohl.
Just I have goosebumps.
Singing beautifully. Now, in the old
playing,
days,
that's some good finger picking going on.
Yeah, he is good. He is so good. In the old days of the in memoriam section, you would hear people applauding for the dead people that they liked most. And that somebody figured out at some point, even in death, this should not be a popularity contest.
I heard a couple rumbles.
I did too.
Not
there
a
were
lot,
one or two.
But a trickle, you
right.
know?
And then even like within my family, we were saying, who's going to get which of the dead people will get the best response? And I thought it would be, who did I say last night it would be? Oh, the guy from the Harry Potter movies, Alan Rickman. I thought Alan Rickman will probably get some really good response.
He got claps from our house.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they left somebody out last night, and this is very, very upsetting. They should not have left this person out.
Ironic.
Yeah, I guess it is ironic in a way. Yeah.
It totally is.
Abe Vigoda was not in last night's in memoriam section.
And oddly enough, he's been in the memoriam section every year prior to
right,
this one
when right.
he actually died.
On the years that Abe was fine and feeling 100%, they put him in there thinking, well, he probably died, didn't he? But no, he died this year. He died just a few short weeks ago, and he did not make the in memoriam section. And you say to yourself, well, Abe Vigoda was from Barney Miller and from Fish. You can't put him in there. No,
that's not the big one.
He was in The Godfather, and that puts you in the Hall of Fame. He was Tessio in The Godfather.
Although, didn't he die this year?
Yeah, he died a few weeks ago, a month ago, a month ago.
So is he going to be in next year's?
The way they've always done it is it's not calendar year. It's not January to December. It's from broadcast to broadcast, from Oscar telecast to Oscar telecast. That's what their year of dead people is.
All right, because that makes sense then, because David Bowie...
Yeah.
Which I, my son Michael was like, David Bowie should be up there. And half of me was like, for what? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a great actor.
Yeah.
And he died in 2016, January 10th.
Didn't he die the same week as Abe Vigoda? I think they died the same week,
Let me find out about Fish.
I think so.
Bunnies. That is just terrible that he was forgotten about. But isn't it fitting? Because for all these years, people thought he was dead. And now that he really is.
Yes. But he deserved to be on there. Now, other people have mentioned a few other names, and only a couple of these. You know, there's a couple that were pretty obscure.
January 26th. So, actually, he died after David Bowie by a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I thought they were closer in death dates.
Jeffrey Lewis was not included in the montage. Do you know who Jeffrey Lewis is? He's the father of Juliette Lewis, but most notably, he was in almost every Clint Eastwood movie that was ever made. He had a part in every Clint Eastwood movie. He's the guy that Hollywood always gets if Bruce Dern can't return the phone call. They would get Jeffrey Lewis. Very similar to Bruce Dern in a lot of ways. Gunnar Hansen is a name you probably go, I'm not sure who. Is that one of the guys from the band Hansen? Gunnar Hansen was the guy who played the original Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He died a few months ago. People thought he should have been in there. And Uggy the dog, who was in the movie The Artist, that was the best movie in 2011. There's this adorable little dog who's in the whole movie. I don't like dogs, and I'll even admit that was an adorable dog.
What has happened to you?
That was a good-looking dog. He was in other movies, too, The Campaign and Water for Elephants. He's been in more movies than I've been in.
The dog?
Yeah, the dog has a better resume. Yeah, Uggy the dog has a better resume than I do. So those are just some of the people that Hollywood's, for some reason, just neglected to put in their montage of people who died this year.
Abe Vigoda, it's really tragic. I mean, Tessio.
I know. Sal Tessio. That
Mo Green was in there.
You're right. He was. Alex Rocco was in there. And you know who had died, and I didn't even know until last night, and then I got sad, and my family's like, what's the big... Do you know who Elizabeth Scott is? She's an actress from the 40s.
Yeah, I remember seeing the name.
Very big. Actually, Abe Vigoda-like eyebrows. Big eyebrows, but a good actress, too. Very, very good actress. But last night, I'm like, oh, man. And one of my daughters goes, she was like in movies 1,000 years ago. You didn't think she died? But I guess I imagined at some point she would have died or has died already. But it was a shock last night.
You know what just hit me, Bill, as I was looking up when Abe Vigoda died, which was February 26th of this year, and David Bowie, which was February 10th, I believe.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to live in a world where we have no Fish or Ziggy Stardust.
No, it's sad. Or Uggy the dog.
God.
Or Elizabeth Scott's eyebrows. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
I thought you cried about her
dying. I was so upset. I loved her.
Well, you quickly got over it.
It's the only way I can deal with it. It's the only thing I can do. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news, and then a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. You probably already know this, but each week our friend Eric Zorn sends us an adjective that he demands to be described by. Today, let me present to you the combustible Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Boy, is that an understatement.
It is an unnegotiable demand. I will not come to the studio unless you agree to use my adjectives.
You are. You're combustible. You just said to Wendy and myself moments ago, isn't this a great time to be in the media? And it is. But let me read to you a headline from today's Huffington Post. Marco Rubio blames the media for the rise of Donald Trump. Is it the media's fault that Donald Trump is where he is?
There is some truth to that, I think, don't you? Which is that Donald Trump was such good ratings. He was such, you know, box office gold for the cable stations that even MSNBC, which doesn't agree with Trump politically, is, you know, basically a left liberal cable channel. When Trump would speak to rallies in, you know, back in December, in November, way before any voting was going to take place, they would go live to cover a Trump speech. They weren't going live to cover Rubio or Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz.
Right.
And this was going on just the other night. It happened. This is you know what I have to say, that when he comes on, like a lot of people, I'm kind of glued to the TV. I can't wait to see what he's going to say next, because you just never know. He's not going through a stump speech saying we're going to do this. He's just riffing. And you never know what he's going to say.
But that's it. It falls under the bracket of the circuses in town. But the circus has rarely made it to the office of presidency.
Rarely, yes. Yeah. Rarely.
So are we to, is the media to blame though?
Well,
I mean, that's a big accusation, isn't it?
You know, it's a chicken egg thing, but I do think that a lot of the attention that he gets justifies the coverage. When he is drawing, you know, 15,000-20,000 people to arenas, when he is saying things that are angering people, that are provoking conversation, when he's just taking over every news cycle, you can't not cover him. Huffington Post, where you read this, they made a decision. I think it was over the summer last year, right after when did Trump announce? Anyway, I'm trying to remember when that was.
I tried not to remember that day.
But he they said that they were going to put news about Donald Trump's candidacy into the entertainment section.
Really?
They weren't going to put it in politics. I'm sure they backed off on that since then. But this was like, we're not taking this seriously. And honestly, I don't think I know. I didn't take it seriously. We all thought it was
none of us did.
Another Herman Cain, you know, 999, and then people would go, "Oh my gosh, he's just a reality TV."
June 16th, 2015.
June 16th. Okay, so yeah,
it's been that long. But just walking around, just if you're in the street, if you're at a restaurant, just keep your ears open. He's the guy that people are talking about, good, bad, or indifferent. He's getting the discussion. I played tennis. I was in a tennis match with a guy I never met on the weekend. And at some point, you go, well, Donald Trump's not going to come up. We're playing tennis. No, in between sets, he goes, so what do you make of this Trump guy? Just out of nowhere. That's the biggest topic going on in the country.
And you have to be
right
a little
now.
Careful what you say because he's got a racket in his
right,
hand.
Right.
Well,
it could be used as a weapon.
What do you think?
Right.
I have my views. I'm not sure I'm going to share them with you.
But the media wouldn't. What would happen if starting today, everybody in the media quietly said, you know what? Let's see what happens if we just stop reporting on it. What would happen?
Well, you can't do that. You have to report on things that he says that are important and things that other people say about him that are important. When he gets an endorsement from Chris Christie on Friday, he got an endorsement from Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions the other day. I mean, he's starting to gather legitimacy when you know that the Republican Party is mobilizing against him right now. Did you happen to catch the things that Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz were saying over the weekend? They really have changed their tone. They were this sort of snipping at Cruz a little, Trump a while back, but they've really gone after him. Rubio's whole thing now is that Trump is a con man.
Yeah.
And he's not a Republican. He's not a conservative. He's a con man. He's a carnival barker. All of which I think is true, manifestly true. They have not been saying this up till now, and people are looking at each other saying, well, what took these guys so long to realize this? Mm-hmm. And is it too late? And there's a lot of thought out there. People who study the polls and look at what's going to happen probably tomorrow, which is, you know, the Super Tuesday SEC primary. Tomorrow, I think there are 12 nominating contests happening.
There are 12.
Could
and then
the
there's
end.
Also American Samoa, which and
it's my favorite Girl Scout cookie.
Right. Oh. It's a delicious Girl Scout cookie.
Derek, you're too slow.
I'm too slow for this show. Is there a slower show I could get on?
Yeah, we'll find you.
We could find you
a slower show than this one. All right, explain this to me. Because I've never been able to figure this out, and I've brought this up on the air before, and no one can explain this to me. American Samoa has a primary, as does Puerto Rico. However, neither of them figure into the Electoral College, so their votes, their delegates don't matter. So why do we go through the process of having a primary in American Samoa and in Puerto Rico if they don't have delegates and they can't participate in the Electoral College?
They don't have delegates. They don't. I mean, I know that they're certainly not in the Electoral College. They don't get votes in the Electoral College. But I thought they send non-voting delegates to the convention.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Maybe to give them a little bit of a sense of buy-in. I mean, these are American territories, right?
And so but if the votes don't count, and they don't count, why do it?
Why do we even know about it is the question.
Right. I don't know.
So that Wendy can make her excellent Girl Scout cookie joke.
It doesn't figure in. It just doesn't.
I don't know.
That's crazy.
That is a good question. It is crazy.
All right. Tomorrow is, as you pointed out, tomorrow is a big day. 12 different states and American Samoa, the most delicious of all Girl Scout cookies, get to decide who they want as president.
Yeah. And there's a lot of talk out there that Trump is going to do so well that it's going to be basically over at that time. You have Ted Cruz, who's probably going to win Texas, but every other contest looks like it's going to go to Trump right now. So, and of course, it also looks like it might be the end of the Bernie Sanders.
That'll be a backbreaker.
You know, not literally, but it could be that Hillary Clinton does extremely well with that. So.
Yep. Calls are coming in 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there.
And Dan is on the line. Hi, Dan.
Hi, I think a lot of people like yourselves are worried about Donald, but I think that it's not the real Donald that you're seeing. I think that this is a persona he's putting out. I think the real Donald is the one that is from the 80s and 90s, that if you watch the old clips, he's a lot more Democratic than he is Republican.
Well, this is exactly what the Republican Party's been talking about, which is that he has said things that are favorable about a lot of things favorable about Planned Parenthood, that he's been pro-abortion rights in the past. He's given money to Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer.
Yeah.
He's Democratic or a very, very moderate Republican posing as an evangelical Christian arch-conservative candidate, and it's a complete fraud.
It's misrepresentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think that's probably true.
I want to take Ron's question because I have the same question. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Bill, Wendy. How you doing? This is Midlothian, Ron. Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Hi. Hi, Ron.
You get good. A double hello there. Say hello to Eric.
Hello?
Go on. You're fine, Ron.
Don't
What's
make
up?
Me mad. I'm combustible.
That's certain of it, but I think one of the reasons why they have the caucuses or the primaries in those territories is even though they're technically it's not really an election, but they do have citizens there. And those citizens will eventually vote, and I guess they want a voice in that function, if that kind of makes sense. I'm not certain of that.
Well, they're all technically citizens of the United States. In American Samoa and in Puerto Rico, they're technically American citizens with a right to vote, but because of the way the Electoral College is structured, those votes don't matter.
Now, do they get to vote?
Yeah.
Even in Tagalog?
Is
that, okay.
I don't know. But anyway, that's the only thing that struck me is the fact that they are citizens.
It's very strange. Ron, thank you very much. Have a great week.
You're sneaky.
The tag-alongs.
I know, you're good. I like trefoils, actually.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back to your calls, your texts, and more discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. You know him as the combustible columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Now, since we're talking about the election and since we're talking about Donald Trump, there's been a little bit of a controversy about him not disavowing the support he's getting from white supremacist groups. Would you like to comment on that?
I would. I better comment on that. If I don't, I could be in trouble.
Right.
I just before I say that, I wanted to say something that Conan O'Brien tweeted that he said, my condolences to Mad Max Fury Road for not winning Best Picture, but if Donald Trump is elected president next year, you can resubmit it as a documentary.
That's excellent.
That's very funny.
Which one of the talk show hosts?
That was Conan.
Conan O'Brien.
God love him.
Very good tweet. Anyway,
he's great, as is Lou Manfredini.
Yeah.
They're both good.
I would put them up against one another, actually. It'd be hard to choose.
Yep.
So anyway, David Duke and some white supremacist groups have endorsed Donald Trump, and he was on CNN with Jake Tapper on Sunday morning, and Tapper was asking him about this, saying, well, do you disavow David Duke? Do you disavow these white supremacist groups? And he was tap dancing like you wouldn't believe. It was crazy. He was like, well, I don't know about David Duke. I don't know who is this David?
Right.
Isn't that John Wayne's nickname? He was
feigning ignorance as to David Duke and white supremacist groups and the KKK.
Right.
Acting as though this is the first he's heard
of.
Depends
on what
them.
Groups you're talking about. I'd have to research these groups and know exactly what they stand for. It was really talk about putting a foot wrong, and it's something that was so obvious it was going to come up because David Duke had come out and endorsed him. What was it, Thursday or Friday?
Yeah.
And so it was going to come up on these Sunday shows when he comes in, and to not have a sharp, ready answer for that.
But other whites, this isn't the first white supremacist group to throw their nod toward him. This has been happening for the past several weeks.
How
We've
many
mentioned
are there?
One or two. Oh, there's bunches of them. There's lots of white supremacist groups, not to the extent they're not as well known as the KKK.
Or David Duke. David Duke
right.
is still the name that I think this is the only name that you could associate. Most people could associate with that.
And
movement.
How could he say, I don't know anything about this David Duke
of? I hadn't heard that he endorsed. How could he have not heard that he endorsed him? We had all heard about it.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, even if he says, I don't know him, I've never met him, who cares? You denounce what he stands for.
Trying to imagine what the little gears turning in his head were like, or what the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other were saying.
Take the support where you can get it.
Yes, watch out, you're going to lose your support.
Well, he has said since, this is his latest statement, he said that because it was hard for him to hear exactly what Jake Tapper's question was about this, that he was hearing it wrong, and it's possible the way his hood was pulled over his head that he couldn't fully hear it. It's very possible.
And somebody, 708, here we go again, Trump bashing. I will tell you, I'm tired of hearing Trump bashing. I really like you both, but it's getting very old hearing it constantly. How can you not bash this?
This is as bashable as 708
would like to call in and defend him on this, then
If you're a fan of his, let's say one or all of us were really considering voting for Donald Trump, and then you heard this, you heard, hey, what about this? White supremacist groups, they like you. They're behind you. They want you to be the president. Wouldn't you go, uh-oh, if white supremacist groups like him, maybe he's not in our best interest.
Well, but yeah,
that's not his fault, though, but he could say, I don't want support
exactly.
like that.
Which, in fairness, he did say later in the day. I mean, I think he realized the day. I think he realized
that's because somebody got to him and said, "Don, look, this is not good. You can't be in bed with the white supremacist groups. You have to come out and
say
something."
They have clean sheets.
Ixnay on the am clay, right? You got to get out there and yeah. And
he denounced it immediately. There's no second thought on that.
Yes, no. I mean, it's clearly but you know what the gears are turning in his head. They're saying, "Well, here's a support group, and I know that a lot of people who are." In those groups who have those thoughts are supporting me. Do I want to alienate them by saying, you know, I distance myself from this? But of course you do.
Right.
Of course you do.
Right.
You know, even if you secretly like them, you realize that it's politically toxic.
But when people talk about the possibility of him being president, this is a prime example of something big is right in front of him and he doesn't know how to navigate it. He's not reading it properly.
Well, that's a really good point, which is like it's not just... Not just that he failed to disavow David Duke and white supremacist groups and the Klan, like, at the snap of a finger. It's that his decision-making process seems to be clotted, right?
Yeah.
That he's confronted with, clearly, what you call a minor political crisis when this happens. And instead of going through it in a sure-footed way, he just blows it. And you think, okay, well, that's okay in politics. But if you have a national crisis or an international crisis and you're, like, unable to think clearly.
Yeah, then that's bad for everybody.
So this idea of him being a strong person, which is his calling card is strength, right? He's like, I'm a strong guy. That his strength is not, if he's not using it well, he's not using it to advantage. That's a real problem.
Yeah. All right, somebody wants to defend Trump, but we don't have any time to take this phone call. So maybe during the second half, because I have some more Trump stuff. Not bashing, just reporting some things that Trump has done that makes him look foolish.
All right.
We'll do that in the second half, maybe?
Yeah, we can do that.
So, Tony, if you're still listening, then call us back.
I'm sure we'll have some stuff to talk about next week, too. So, maybe the story will still be going on.
I think he's going to stick, guys. I think he's going to be around for the long haul.
Tomorrow really is a major day on both sides, on the Democratic side and the Republican side. Super Tuesday's living up to its billing this time around, isn't it?
Right. Well, there's the question is whether Bernie Sanders can hold enough states, whether he can win a few states and continue to be plausible. He got clobbered in South Carolina.
Yeah.
It was much worse than people. Hillary Clinton did better than Barack Obama did among African-American voters in South Carolina, which is extraordinary when you think about that. She won 87% of the black vote. She won 73.5% of the overall Democratic vote there. Those are horrible numbers for Sanders when you realize that he spent a lot of time there and he spent $2 million advertising there. So he's got problems.
And his rock has been younger voters, and for reasons they still can't fully understand, they didn't show up in the numbers they expected.
Yeah, he still did win, I think, the under 29 vote.
Yeah.
But that's not enough because that's not a part of the electorate that tends to show up in great numbers in most elections. The Democratic turnout has been down in this primary season. The Republican turnout has been up, and that's ominous, and the Democratic Party knows it, which is that the excitement isn't there. Either way, even though there's excitement for Bernie Sanders, there's still not the same kind of excitement and interest that there is in the Republican field. And so that's something they're going to have to turn around somehow.
He's shaking it up, that's for sure, and that's for good, I think. More people are paying attention. Kids, you know, who aren't even ready to vote yet are paying attention.
Yeah.
He's done something to shake it up. That's a good thing.
So on the positive side, there's that.
This is how it starts.
My glass is half full.
My glass is
full
shattered.
Of what? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm mostly, what's it full of?
Vinegar. All right, a quick break. The news, we'll find
thank
out
Eric.
What's... Thank you, Eric, very much. We'll find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and this is the second part of our show. You can contribute by dialing us up at 312-981-7200. You can call us there, or you can text us there.
What a lovely sunny day.
Yeah, this isn't bad, is it? I'm trying to remember last year's 29th of February, and for some reason the last few years
there
just seemed
one.
To have escaped me. I don't know why.
There wasn't a 29th of February, you
it's
smarty.
It's leap day.
It's definitely the calm before the storm, I think.
Yeah, because
yeah,
we've got snow again.
Like a sleet storm coming our way.
A lot, yeah. And actually they've extended it, and it looks like it's starting earlier than I originally thought, so the afternoon commute could get kind of ugly.
Great. Starting tomorrow, right?
No, it starts tonight at 5 and goes through 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, my geez.
So could get ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's all right. We're still ahead of the game, right?
We are, but
mild
now,
winter.
The pattern that we're now getting is a bunch of really cold, either windy or snowy or something similar days, and then one or two days as if to say, look, we've got this in us. We can have some nice days, and then it gets cold again. We don't know what to do every
day. Well, we're almost out of the woods. Come on. I know you can still count on some blizzards in February and March.
Right.
Has it snowed in April?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah.
I guess.
It has.
Has it snowed in May or June?
I know it snowed in May. I don't know that
seriously,
it has snowed.
Seriously, in May?
Yeah, in the first weeks of May. But I don't know about June.
Do we ever get any snow? August?
No, you're fine.
I bet it'll change.
I miss the days of watching Romper Room in the morning when Miss Elizabeth would put on a raincoat or a snow hat or something on a little pretend child. And then you go, well, Miss Elizabeth says it's going to be cold, so it must be cold. She was the Tom Skilling of our time when we were young, was Miss Elizabeth on Romper Room.
Speaking of Tom Skilling, in 1910 there was snow on June 2nd, and also in 1928, September 25th, it started, and in 1942.
That would be so awful.
All right, you said it didn't snow in June.
Well, not in our lifetimes. I mean, I wasn't around for that. That was, what did you say, 1902, Kevin? When was that? That was 100 and something years
1910
ago. 1910.
Oh, 1910. On June 2nd.
Yeah. That makes a difference.
So we didn't. We weren't around for that.
It's gonna happen. You know why?
Because
Leonardo DiCaprio called it.
In his speech last night, he talked about how the
climate change.
Right. Yeah.
Can we hear it?
Yeah.
Making the Revenant was about man's relationship to the natural world, a world that we collectively felt in 2015 as the hottest year in recorded history. Our production needed to move to the southern tip of this planet just to be able to find snow. Climate change is real. It is happening right now. It is the most urgent threat facing our entire species. And we need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. We need to support leaders around the world who do not speak for the big polluters or the big corporations, but who speak for all of humanity, for the indigenous people of the world, for the billions and billions of underprivileged people who will be most affected by this, for our children's children, and for those people out there whose voices have been drowned out by the politics of greed. I thank you all for this amazing award tonight. Let us not take this planet for granted. I do not take tonight for granted. Thank you so very much.
I got goosebumps when he said that, very last line.
Well, here's what happened. Yeah, the last line tied it up beautifully, didn't it?
Absolutely.
It did. People have been, you know, over time, have sometimes used or abused the privilege of having that platform for political messages. And that was, I guess you could bracket that as a political message.
Absolutely.
It is an important one. It baffles me that so many politicians refuse to recognize the fact that there's climate change. And it's been explained to me from several different people that it's done because there are lobbyists who benefit from us not doing anything to make any changes. So I guess I understand that if it hurts their business, they're going to put out the message. If you have a business that would somehow benefit from us not doing anything and you're funneling
like what
money.
Business?
It's been explained to me that the Koch brothers and their energy business would take a huge hit if we did do something the way it's been urged to us to do something.
I just love when you get people, and again, it turns into a political issue. I love when we get snow and people on their Facebook posts put, oh, I got to shovel all this global warming.
Right.
It means that the whole world is getting warmer and the polar ice caps are melting, which changes everything.
Right.
Well, I'll be underwater. It's going to be water world. All of a sudden, Kevin Costner now looks like a genius.
Well, Kevin Costner's always looked like a genius. That hasn't changed.
I think
luckily.
I'm the only person who liked that
luckily.
Movie.
No, I liked it too.
Oh, you did? That's
pretty
good.
So yeah, he took a minute or two there.
But it's true. He said in order to film this, they had to go to the southernmost part of the world. And it's funny because we were talking about this off the air, and you feel like, oh, none of these you're a celebrity. Shut up and act in your movie. But it's odd when you agree with them, then all of a sudden it's not so bad. But when they're saying you don't agree with, shut up and start acting.
Right. Yeah, there's that.
He is really a class act, though, isn't he? And I find it shocking he's never won an Academy Award before.
He's been a solid actor.
Inception, he should have won. Who's Eating Gilbert Grape?
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
No, who?
That's an adult film.
Oh, that. Oops.
He wasn't in the
adult film. Did I say that on the air?
Yeah.
But he was so good in that. He's been in so many great movies.
Yeah, The Aviator he was really good in. The list goes on and on and on. What's the one where he's on an island with Mark Ruffalo, the Scorsese movie that's like, what's it called? I can't think of the name of it. I'll find it. From about 5 years ago. He's really good in that. He's always good. He's Leonardo DiCaprio. You can't beat that.
And what was the sitcom he was on? Was it Facts of Life? Different Strokes? I can never remember.
The one with the Seavers.
Oh, yeah. Which one was that?
I'm trying to remember who he played in that.
Thick of the Night.
Not Thick of the Night, but the one with Alan Thicke.
I can't remember the name of it.
I don't know.
With Kirk Cameron, which, Growing Pains?
Yeah, it's Growing
Pains. Thank you, Kevin. Can I tell you something terrible that you're never going to talk to me again?
What? I doubt that, but go ahead. What is it?
I'm liking Fuller House.
I'm never going to talk to you again.
I know!
Why would you watch that?
All right, first of all, I have the hots for John Stamos, and quite honestly, who doesn't?
You're supposed to. All right.
I've always loved Bob Saget.
Yeah.
I know the whole charm and funniness of it is he's on this wholesome show, and he's really one of the filthiest comics ever.
True.
He does not look that good.
Oh, no.
I love him. He looked slouchy. I don't know.
Well, he's older than he was the first time around.
I know. Well, so is Coulier.
They're all older.
But Coulier looks okay.
Yeah.
And John Stamos, I'm sorry. You know how when you get older, your ears get bigger? It's already happening to John Stamos.
Oh, come on.
Other than that.
He eats all that Greek yogurt. He'll stay healthy forever.
I watched it because my kids grew up watching Full House. They watch the reruns. And so Dylan has the flu. I'm a terrible mom. I didn't get my kids a flu shot this year, despite the fact that I got one. And Dylan's been really, really sick with the flu.
Yeah.
So he's laying on the couch.
You thought you'd make him feel better by watching Full House?
No, he suggested it. He goes, Mom, you want to check out Fuller House? And I said, I'm thinking, not really. But he's there with his little Powerade and his chicken noodle soup. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. I think I binge watched 4 episodes.
Oh, no.
And I was mad at him because he proceeded without me.
Yeah.
I'm liking it.
What do you like about it? The crisp writing?
No, because it's very hokey. But I don't know. Something about it I enjoy. Stephanie has started a new singing career. So I guess it's very lame that John Stamos sings.
Yeah.
And so does now the character who plays Stephanie, Jodie Sweetin, I believe is her name.
It is, yeah.
Kimmy Gibbler is still as annoying as she always has been, but I found myself really enjoying it. I know.
You need an exorcism.
Conversely,
yes.
I did watch Mad Max over the weekend, which is, I thought you'd be proud of me
for
doing.
I am proud of you for that.
That rocked.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, I am not, I prefer men, but if I were to switch teams, Charlize Theron, or however you say her name, I'd learn how to say it.
You can say it however you want.
Oh, my God. With her little stub arm, she is the best.
Yeah, she's really good in it, isn't she?
Oh.
Yeah, she's great. And she looked great. You know, we haven't talked about this, and I think the reason we haven't talked about this is it is now sexist to talk about who looked good at the Academy Awards. But every year that was a big deal, is who looks the best. But now I think we've been told that that's really sexist to comment on who looked the best. But if it weren't sexist, I think Charlize Theron was one of the best looking of all. If I can,
her dress looked great. I didn't like her hair.
Waters, a little short,
just
a little on the short side.
Not even the short, because I honestly thought it was pulled back in a ponytail at first. I didn't like the way it looked. Although, boy, when she was had a buzz cut in Mad Max,
you like that? That was working.
Well, she's gorgeous.
She is. She's very pretty.
So, you know, I guess pull back the hair and show off that gorgeous face. My new girlfriend, by the way.
You know, phrase I heard last night a couple times I'd never heard before. was gender confirmation surgery.
Yeah, that came up more than once, didn't it?
I only heard it once when they were talking about Eddie Redmayne, who was in...
The Danish Girl?
Yeah, which I want to see.
Yeah, I heard it a couple times.
He looks better as a woman.
So your advice to Eddie Redmayne would be...
Go for it.
Become a woman. You'd be prettier.
He'd look beautiful.
He almost... I mean, it's very rare that you win the award twice in a row. Inarritu won, the director won for Revenant, but...
And he's the Birdman guy?
Yeah. What a change of fortunes for him there, to go from Birdman to Revenant and win two in a row. I don't think a director's ever done that before. I don't think. I could look it up.
And Louis C.K., here's my question to you and to Steve Bertrand.
What?
Why did we have to find out about the documentaries? Like, to shorten the show, couldn't you have had those things go...
Well, there were a couple
off
things
camera.
In retrospect that you could have done shorter. Like, it bothered me. This guy Inarritu went up and was making a great speech about the film and about directing. But in the back, you had that that Valkyrie song with na 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 to get
Flight
him off
of the
Valkyries. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, Flight of the Valkyries. I think so.
Yeah. So
what a weird choice.
Yeah, but you know, I just think, especially for your major categories. Director, best film, best actor, best actress.
Let them talk.
Give them their time.
They didn't cut Leo off.
Right.
The music thing was weird. I mean, and there must be some explanation of why the music in and out of the commercials were like...
At 40 seconds, they play as if to say to the presenter or to the winner, okay, your 40 seconds are up. You got to go.
But I mean, even in and out of the commercial breaks, the music selection was a lot of... Seems like it was music of the 80s or something, or the 70s.
There was one or two TV themes that were in there, which were strange. There were a couple of James Bond themes, which I'm okay with. I love James Bond music. But you're right, Steve. Some of the music, you go, that isn't exactly what I'd be playing at the Academy Awards normally.
Every year I start to get mad at 10:15. I'm like, come on. I got to go to bed.
Hurry up.
This is ridiculous.
Production-wise, this was one of the worst shows ever. If you noticed, some of my favorite shots were when the cameraman got like the back of the chairs.
Yeah, that happened a few times.
Several times.
You also saw more open seats. Like normally they have what they call seat fillers to quickly get in there and sit. But there were a couple of shots where you go, wow, there's like four or five people missing from that table. That section, not table, they were all sections.
And I'm surprised at what was this, the 88th Academy Award show, and this is the first time C-3PO gets out there to talk about his I can't think of the word, it sounds like the way that he looks like the Oscar.
Oh, his similarity?
Yes, yeah. That was the word I was searching for. This is the first time in 88 years. And it was perfect.
I'm never good when they have, like, those guys, or they did Woody and...
Oh, I loved that.
You like when they do that stuff?
Minions, that totally overrated, though.
But all that stuff is just...
Really? Because it's about animation. They were talking about animation.
I know.
You're such a prude.
How about the... And again, I just have to come peace with the fact it's their show. It's going to go 4 hours, and it's just going to go... just going to go 4 hours.
Yeah.
But, you know, with every major... acting role, they did the pan, like they had the presenter and then the shots of
right.
the nominees,
yeah.
which was kind of cool, you know.
Yeah.
So they set up each one, and then when they introduced them as nominees, then they did another clip, you know, which made each of those presentations
even
like
longer.
Twice as long.
So do the clip and then end it on the panel. That's how you could do it and get away with it. Like show their clip and then put their panel up behind them.
Oh, I guess so.
So that's just one thing.
Right.
And how many winners before you stopped reading the crawl of the people they wanted to
Well, they stopped doing it at some point.
I wondered
they did
about
it for
that.
A while, and then after a little while, they didn't have that. Because one of the ladies who had won an award even mentioned, she said there were names that were going to go in the crawl, but I don't see that. So
they stopped doing that? I tuned that out after about 10 seconds.
They stopped for a while, and then later on they brought it back. But even in those thank yous, it was weird because it was a bunch of first names.
Right.
And well, they got to choose that, though.
Sure.
They wrote that.
And then they put in so many. So the people who wanted to be thanked,
right?
You know, it's probably a loved one of the winner.
Right.
Well, are you going to be looking at the crawl for your name or looking at your loved one reacting
right.
to the award?
That
well,
was strange.
It was really weird. And I think Dean Richards said it was like watching the Home Shopping Club where you had, you know, the crawl going, now,
yeah,
buy this now.
At least they tried something, you know, they gave it a shot.
Yeah, it's a good idea in theory. And actually, oh, Let's take a break. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll discuss it more. Last night's Academy Awards and anything else you want. 312-981-7200, Bill Mundy, WGN.
We're talking about the 88th Annual Academy Awards, and all in all, I thought it was a pretty awesome show.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it because I thought you would make fun of me if I didn't.
I would have, and I still will. But well, for different reasons. Before the show, they do a thing. It's Robin Roberts from Good Morning America, and it's Michael Strahan, the new Regis, and then a couple of other people.
He is not the new Regis.
He's the new Regis. And everywhere he went, he pretended as though he wasn't supposed to be there. I don't know if you watched this, but he'd go to the green room and, I'm not supposed to be here. And then he'd walk around there and he'd talk to somebody, and then he'd go somewhere in the hallway, I'm not supposed to be here either. And
was
then
it
he'd
Mike
talk to
Tyson
somebody.
Or
they've
Strahan?
Become the same at this point. And then Robin Roberts and Michael Strahan would ask everybody the same question. They'd go, what advice do you have for the nominees?
Oh my God.
And then they would give the advice. And then I would say, I bet the nominees are not watching this. I bet the nominees are probably there in the hall waiting for the show. So isn't there a better question to ask the people they're talking to?
Yeah, but they did it for us, not for really
but we're
them.
Not nominees.
I know, but it's interesting to hear what they had to say. And I didn't know about the you couldn't ask who they're wearing until Chris Rock said that.
Yeah, that happened.
That's been growing a little bit.
A couple of years ago they started it, but this year it was forbidden not to ask women, not guys. You could ask guys.
Well, that's what he explained. Yeah. And the whole reason for it was because women, that everybody looks to see what they're wearing. And as Chris Rock put it, the guys all pretty much wear the same thing.
Tuxedo.
He said, you know, if George Clooney comes in a bright orange tuxedo, then they'd go, who the hell are you wearing,
right.
Clooney?
Right.
Paraphrasing.
Yeah, it's strange because it is such a big deal to everybody who goes, mostly the women, to really dress it up and wear the best dresses and the best makeup and the best jewelry. But then if you ask the question, it is considered sexist. It's a very strange dichotomy.
Well, are they going to have to start to pay for those dresses if they're not
going right.
to
exactly.
Right.
Because they can't say this is a, you know.
But the point is,
Ralph Lauren.
You can ask that, but you have to ask other things, too. What other projects are you working on? How's the family? Have you ever been to Switzerland? You can ask questions, but don't just focus only on the clothes because that objectifies them.
Yeah, but that's what they're doing. Do you know that they spend like so much time? Oh, I had all those statistics. Each person, a woman who gets ready for the Academy Awards, by the time's all said and done, it's like $33,000 has
sure.
been spent between the dress, which you're right, Steve. If they're not saying what designer they're wearing, Stella McCartney's going to make you pay for it.
Right. Right.
And yep. that's they get all gussied up for people to ask them.
You don't just want to look plain on that night. You want to stand out a little bit.
And you want people to say, oh, my God, that is a great dress,
yeah.
Bill.
Yeah, yeah. How about that Olivia Wilde, huh?
She's overrated.
What? Olivia Wilde?
I mean, she's very pretty. She
looked great. Rachel McAdams looked great.
Are you just talking about the side breasts?
No.
Yes, what about those?
I didn't even notice. And I didn't stand on the side of my television
yes,
and try to look
did.
In. No, I did not. Hurry up, 3D technology. What are you waiting for? Yeah,
they all looked beautiful. You know who looked really good to me, who I don't really find to be attractive?
No.
Sofia Vergara. She did not...
What do you mean you don't find
you don't
her to be
find
attractive?
Sofia Vergara
oh
to be attractive.
Oh my God, what is this, the Sofia Vergara choir?
Everyone on the planet and other planets think she's
no.
attractive.
The eyebrows ruin it for me. They're
got...
I know you didn't see her eyebrows. Whatever.
You said that. We didn't.
She
we just
looked
nodded
so
in agreement.
Pretty because just her hair pulled back. Not a lot of... She really looked beautiful
she's,
to me.
She is beautiful. You don't
sometimes.
Think she... Oh. All right.
We all have... I mean, Olivia Wilde is attractive, but...
But?
Who was she up there with?
Doesn't matter.
Well, she was up with
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Ellie G,
yeah.
who I thought had a really great thing, but we're going to have to take a break and do some news, and then I would like to play it because
right.
I thought it was pretty awesome.
All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. With the departure of Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy, how long ago was that?
A couple of months already, right?
All right. We are on the lookout and looking for a new police superintendent here in Chicago. And I guess there are 39 candidates, and we're going to get to know someone now. Baltimore Police Department officers were standing behind a barrier. Protesters were gathering near the Baltimore Police Department's Western District Station during a march and vigil over the death of Freddie Gray, April 21st, 2015, in Baltimore, Maryland. 25-year-old Gray died from spinal injuries on April 19th, 1 week after being taken into police custody. There was a story here in the city where someone who had some mental illness, police were called to the scene, and this person was shot. A neighbor was shot. There's a lot of criticism that the Chicago Police Department is getting, and all of a sudden Gary McCarthy's gone. Want you to meet Michael A. Wood Jr. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Bill and Lindy. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the platform opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, we're trying to restore all this public trust. There's now going to be some new training where police officers should know and be trained to deal with mentally ill. A lot of misconduct cases in the news. And we would like you to tell us why you're pretty uniquely qualified to lead the Chicago Police Department.
Well, I think the biggest unique aspect of me is that I'm trying to say that we need to change the entire paradigm of what policing is. We literally need to stop and put on the brakes and ask for the first time what the people want from police, because we've never actually even asked that question. We've always had the evolution of law enforcement, and then police leadership arose and told the populace what to want, what they wanted, and it became like an ideology. We do things now that are actually ineffective. And first thing we need to do is just stop and listen. And that's what I've been trying to demonstrate over the last year and have been fighting since about 2009, is to stop and listen to the people.
And you were absolutely fed up with all the misconduct that you said that you saw in Baltimore in the police department. So you began posting some of the stuff you witnessed on Twitter, which, of course, captured attention from Newsweek, The Washington Post. You have left the force in 2014. But now, how do the police officers respond to you tweeting out what you're not liking? The people, I'm sure, love it. But what about the police department?
Well, I mean, I fully expected that there was going to be people that didn't like what I was saying. I mean, it's a brotherhood, so no one's going to like that transparency and that exposure. But shockingly, even to me, a lot of cops understand and they get it. I've had hundreds, if not thousands, of emails from across the country of cops and people wanting to go into the profession that are really understanding, and getting this discussion going is like sowing those seeds so that the new crop of officers and a lot of the younger officers truly get that we do need to stop and rethink what we're doing.
You spent how many years, Michael? Did you spend 11 years there in Baltimore for the Baltimore Police Department?
Yes, sir, 11 years.
All right, 11 years. Is the situation in Baltimore, was the situation in Baltimore comparable in any way to what's going on right now here in Chicago?
Well, you have all the same indicators, and that's kind of one of my leading frustrations right now, is Chicago seems to be on the same path that Baltimore was on. It just seems to be about a year behind, and like, I want to scream, like, you guys don't make the same mistakes, because we're the same type of cities. You have the hyper-segregation. You have the proximity to environmental pollution. You have all these same indicators. It's like the exact same scenarios. You're just three times larger. So I want to sit there and just say, no, you can't. You have to approach this thing differently. We don't need to follow that same path. Mm-hmm. And watching it is very frustrating.
We have Michael A. Wood Jr. on the line with us, wants to be Chicago's next top cop to replace Superintendent Gary McCarthy. So one of 39 applicants for this job. Now, hearing you talk, I would imagine the public is like, all right, listen to this guy. He's going to make sure the cops don't have any wrongdoing, maybe rebuild that trust between the community and the police department. Who votes for this? I mean, how are you appointed? I don't have any idea how a police superintendent gets the job.
Well, it varies by geography and jurisdiction, but for you guys, it's pretty much up to the mayor who's going to get the job. So he's supposed to represent the people. So like, that's my only hope. I am not the traditional candidate. You're not going to see me unless people really push. And the question is that push strong enough yet?
Have you met the mayor yet?
I haven't. I welcome it.
You better get in there, dude.
Yeah, hurry up. Hurry up. Michael, this is one of those jobs, and I mean, there's a lot of jobs like this. The presidency is one of these jobs where you say, why would anybody want that job? Why would anybody want to be Chicago's police commissioner? Why do you want the job so badly?
I don't really feel like it's a choice. So I focus my education. I thought this was going to be a scholarly endeavor. I started doing the science of this, and I thought I was going to, like, pretty much invent the police science of, you know, management, that like, actually make it a science and do it from that approach. And then when the uprising here happened and we had Black Lives Matter rise and I became more involved with them, that like it feels like a moral imperative now that I have the skills, I see it, I listen to the people. No, there's not another cop in this country that can stand on the front lines of a Black Lives Matter protest and be accepted, and then go into a roll call room and understand that side and be accepted. It's like, I feel like I have to do it, or at least I have to make myself available for that choice to be there.
All right, reading some of the tweets, and some of it I can't say on the air, but relieving oneself inside suspects' home during raids on their beds and clothes. That's one of the tweets that you put out there. Punting a handcuffed face down suspect in the face after a foot chase. My handcuffs, not my boot or suspect. These are some pretty harsh things that you're criticizing the Baltimore Police Department of, and you're still getting support from police officers out there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows it's wrong. And when you're in that moment, you still know it's wrong. It's just that you're so ingrained in that us versus them mentality that it's like the assault and the victimization, it isn't comprehended. Just like, you know, any other group out there that you can think of, whether it's the military or other police departments in the past, like you just get into that isolated bubble and don't stand outside and take a real look. And the more we push integration instead of occupation and getting people to look, they do start to see it. It's just, we got to break out of that bubble.
Michael A. Wood Jr. is his name. He's one of the applicants, 39 applicants to be the Chicago police chief. We'll continue this conversation in a minute. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. That's our phone number and our text line. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Michael A. Wood Jr. is our guest. He's an ex-Marine. He served in Baltimore's police department for 11 years, and now he wants to come here and be the Chicago police chief. Michael, let's say you got the job. Let's say you are the new chief of police here for the city of Chicago. What do you do right away?
Well, the first thing we have to do is stop being the enemy and change our metrics. We have to filter through a new standard. What is generally accepted as being right in policing is whether it's lawful. We don't actually seek justice. And we don't even measure whether we're doing the right thing. We measure whether we're doing the legal thing. So we have to stop and say, what is the right thing? And there's certain things that we know for sure, such as the enforcement of low-level narcotics, and that we know start a cycle that create more crime and make us actually part of the problem instead of part of the solution, and make our officers less safe by chasing down drug offenses.
Now, the city of Chicago is reviewing applications from candidates locally and in other cities. A total of 39 candidates. The application deadline was January 15th. And Michael Wood Jr. is on the line with us. You started tweeting things, quote, that I've seen and participated in policing that is corrupt, intentional or not. I think this is a great idea. I think if we have someone, the top cop, who is helping the public, we would love that. We would love to see that. I'm curious as to what the mayor would think about this. And why haven't you talked to Mayor Rahm Emanuel yet? When are they going to decide?
I don't know how they're trying to go about it and what they're going to decide. I truly want to represent the people and see that this reform is absolutely necessary. I've been making the argument. Anybody can go on the internet and type my name in. There's hundreds of hours of videos where I kind of break down a lot more of the nuance of this discussion. But
this reform is absolutely necessary. We see it from all sides, and it's like we're just afraid to make that change. And if we stop being afraid, I mean, there's not going to be some, the world's not going to fall apart if we allow regular citizens to have an influence over the direction of a police department. I mean, that's what it is. It's a team effort, and we really understand that that must take place, but we have to do it. It's like, let's do it, please.
You're not going to get an argument out of us. I mean, I completely agree with that, but don't you have to capture the attention of the people going through these applications?
Well, one thing that I've done differently and that they should have hopefully noticed was that I'm already transparent and public. I'm not hiding anything. My application is on the website with all 8 essay questions. It's like a 38-page application that spells out specifically what I would want to do there and what my thoughts are in regards to Chicago. So those things are different. I'm being transparent. I'm trying to show that. Whether anyone's going to hear that, I don't know. I mean, I can't call the mayor. He's not going to pick up.
Why not? Seriously, don't you think
you were that easy?
Well, you have to get the ear of someone because, you know, this sounds great. It looks great on paper. It looks great on Twitter. But, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, I mean, you got to make some noise and get noticed, don't you?
We're hoping. I mean, this is what we're doing interviews. This is like this actually like it's so it's I feel like it's not about me. It is about these reform ideas. I only represent the willingness to not want to come in and be a dictator. I only represent the willingness to listen and try to come to team efforts that we go out to and do, and not just like my ideas. It's not my ideas. This is about the people. So it's like the people have to do this.
Michael, explain this. And this is a problem locally, but it's also a problem nationally. You have an area that's predominantly an African-American area, but the police force that are taking care of that area is a predominantly white police force. What's the reason behind that? Is that something that should change, do you think?
I mean, obviously, it should change how we spell that out. I think it's more about integration, not occupation. So I'll say that all the time because, for example, in Baltimore, William Porter, who was one of the officers charged in the killing of Freddie Gray, he just grew up blocks away from Freddie Gray and still wasn't invested into that community. So it's about having people in a system set in place that makes the officer invested in the community. That's one of the big dramatic things that's taken place with me since I've retired, is that I've really become invested in the local activism and in the community in Baltimore. And it's such a change in perspective that that's just what we need people to do. And so those things will flow naturally if we're integrating in the community.
Now, you publicly left the force. You retired, what, in 2014?
Yes, ma'am.
And when did you start tweeting these things?
That was June. So it was about a year and a half later.
So it's not like you were forced out or anything. You chose to leave.
Right. I had an injury. So that's my only thing. I mean, I would have been in the agency other than having an injury, and they force you out in Baltimore after you've had a year that you can't, and I had to have another surgery. So that's the only reason I was out.
Just one of these tweets that really makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. Targeting 16 to 24-year-old black males, essentially, because we arrest them more, perpetuating the circle of arresting them more. I mean, it makes total sense.
Right, and that's kind of the evolution of where profiling has gone. So and we went from, like, a racial profiling thing to a geography profiling to, you know, predicting variables of who's going to have, you know, be arrestable, and who's going to be arrestable is the person you keep looking at because they have an arrest record. I mean, it's this weird circular logic that invades a lot of policing that kind of gets us into this cycle where there is no justice, and you have that separation of us versus them because there's a different legal operating system.
Michael, good luck with this. What's your next step before we let you go? I know how badly you want this job to be the Chicago police chief, but what's
the
next thing?
We don't know why you want this job.
It's a thankless task. It really is. But what do you do next?
Right now, I'm working on my PhD still. That's what I'm doing, my dissertation, to do this from a scientific approach.
Yeah.
I'm involved in as much activism as I can. And I am waiting. As far as I know, I would be getting a phone call if somebody wanted me to come in. But that's really up to the citizens. It's like, if you guys want that, you have to push that. I can only make myself available. And if it's time for that, then it's time for that.
Yeah, but we can't go out and get you that job, Michael A. Wood Jr. You got to go do it. I mean, it's not like we have Rahm Emanuel's number on our speed dial where we can go, hey, we got a guy for you.
We're blocked. Our numbers are blocked on his phone.
I don't know if mine is or not.
Oh, all right. All right.
It sounds like you know what you're talking about, and it sounds like you really, truly want to make a difference. So we wish you the best of luck. Whatever we can do to help you, although I don't know what we can do.
All we got to do is talk. These platforms and these discussions make people think about a different approach, regardless of whether it's time yet or not.
All right. Well, we hope you get the job, because when we get arrested for reckless behavior, we want to say we know the Chicago police chief. We want to talk to Michael A. Wood Jr. All right. Thank you, Michael. Good luck.
Right,
all right.
Keep us posted, too. I mean, it really sounds like a fantastic plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just,
so
you know,
let's see what happens with it
for the public end of things, where this guy's tweeting out all the corruption and things that's going on.
Sure.
But, you know, the whole brotherhood of police officers.
Yeah, that's a clash.
Seem
isn't
like,
it?
Yeah, a little
yeah,
bit.
A little bit. All right. We'll take a break. Steve, thanks. Hi, we're Bill and Wendy. What are your names? 312-981-7200, that's our phone number and our text line. They're one and the same.
It's like the waitress, you know. Hi, my name's Wendy, I'll be your server. And yeah, then the person comes back and says, hi, I'm Bill, I'll be your customer.
Everybody loves it. Everybody loves it. Do you enjoy a good conspiracy theory?
I am very fond of conspiracy
theories. Sure, they're always fun, aren't they? Here's one that's been making the rounds. I think I saw this Friday or Saturday, and I just kind of dismissed it because I said to myself, well, this is silly. This isn't going to get any kind of traction. But I was wrong. It was even bigger late into Saturday and into Sunday. And then it's all over the internet again today. And that is the theory that JonBenet Ramsey, remember JonBenet Ramsey?
I can't forget her.
JonBenet Ramsey is still alive. And as a bonus, she is now Katy Perry.
Is this real?
Well,
I mean, is this real? I mean, I know it's not real. Let me rephrase that. Somebody really believes this
yes,
to be true?
Yes.
I have lost sleep over poor JonBenet Ramsey.
It's an awful story.
I really, every time her name comes up, now it's going to be weeks that I'm thinking about her. Because
yeah,
who did it? Was it her brother? And then poor Patsy, her mother, died of cancer.
Right.
The whole tragic tale of JonBenet Ramsey has bothered me a portion of my life.
Remember the guy who, oh, 5 or 6 years ago, there was a guy who said, hey, the search is over, I'm your guy, I did it. And then they went through forensics tests and stuff, and he didn't do it. So that's another interesting twist to a story that we already had plenty of interesting twists. And the fact that in a day and age of DNA where they can figure out things from thousands and thousands of years ago, they still can't solve this case.
Well,
that's
it's
amazing.
Gone.
Yeah, they stopped.
I mean, the DNA is gone. I've never, poor JonBenet Ramsey.
Slash Katy Perry,
she
according
is
to this.
Not, what is wrong?
According to this.
Is this person a Trump supporter?
It does not say. It does not say. I will read you the story. Feel free to wince, because you, like us, know that JonBenet Ramsey is not Katy Perry. The internet, it says here, this is according to New York Daily News, the internet is buzzing with a new conspiracy theory. Is Katy Perry actually JonBenet Ramsey? Now, I could have ended the article quickly by saying no, and then that would have been the end of it, but they continued.
They don't even look alike.
Well, no, they don't. No, they do not. Ramsey, a six-year-old girl from Boulder, Colorado, was found strangled in the basement of her family home in 1996. Boy, it's been a long time, hasn't it? It's 20 years. That's 20 years. But to this day, the case remains unsolved. For some reason, this has fueled speculation that the preteen beauty queen's death was actually faked, and instead, she grew up to be famed pop star Katy Perry.
The hell is wrong with people?
This may be, even in the world of conspiracy theories where there are no rules and anything goes, this may be the dumbest of all conspiracy theories.
I bet you believe in alien life before you believe this conspiracy.
Yeah, that makes way more sense, doesn't it? A YouTube video of the conspiracy was posted back in December of 2014 by Dave Johnson, but recently started getting more attention. JonBenet Ramsey did not die. Nobody died. Nobody got hurt, Johnson says in his video. She was sacrificed, and that sacrifice was in name only. That sacrifice was to get something, and that something was to become a pop star. This, again, according to Dave Johnson.
Oh, yeah, nice common name. Get this guy on.
Dave, I'd love to talk to Dave Johnson.
Kevin, try and book YouTube aficionado Dave Johnson.
Conspiracist. It'll be easy to find. Look in the white pages. You'll only find one Dave Johnson. JonBenet Ramsey became Katy Perry. That's a fact, he added. So if any of you continue to lie about this person dying, you are in fact a false witness to murder and death. Throughout the video, Dave Johnson provides pieces of evidence. Now, I would have said pieces of something, but not evidence, that he believes will back his theory. For one, he states that Perry's parents, this is Katy Perry, Perry's parents, pastors Keith Hudson and Mary Perry. Mary Perry's her mom. Hey,
look, you're eerily Mary Perry.
They look eerily similar to JonBenet Ramsey's parents, Patsy and John Ramsey.
Patsy's dead.
Well, when she was alive. It points out here that Patsy Ramsey died of cancer in 2006. Another YouTube user, Jungle Surfer.
Oh, my good Lord.
Now, I'm quoting the work of Jungle Surfer, Wendy, so you know this is legit.
You know how easy it is to be a YouTube star, by the way?
Right. I know. Is it better to make up a fake name like Jungle Surfer or make up a name like Dave Johnson? That's not his real name, is it?
That's not creative, anyway.
I don't think it is. Another YouTube user, Jungle Surfer, posted their own take on the parents' looks, pointing out that their eyebrow shape
is very similar. Me into this.
Here's what Jungle Surfer says, Wendy. Pay close attention. This will be on the final. You're born with your eyebrows, Jungle Surfer said.
Oh, my God.
No, so far.
This guy's a genius.
So far, he's right. They're very close indeed, aren't they? He said while comparing the eyebrows of Katy Perry's parents and JonBenet Ramsey's parents. I think you got to get an eyebrow specialist for this. I don't think you can trust Jungle
Robert
Surfer.
Shapiro. Get
Shapiro,
him on.
We need to, this is when we need Shapiro. As you know, the whole entertainment industry is just a charade, or do you say charade? You really don't know the truth, added Jungle Surfer. Johnson claims that Johnson claims that Katy Perry, aged 31, has been in hiding since the news of the murder case broke in 1996, but she rose to fame for her single I Kissed a Girl in 2008. So without that being a hit, if Katy Perry didn't have a hit with I Kissed a Girl, she would have remained in hiding, according to Dave. The singer was born on October 25th, 1984, as Catherine Elizabeth Hudson in Santa Barbara, California, while Ramsey was born on December 25th, 1990.
Has no connect. Where's the connection there?
It's just 6 years difference. It's almost the same. It's a difference of a scant 6 years, Wendy. You have to admit that's kind of eerie, don't you? I think they've won me over. I didn't really realize that it was just a 6 year difference. Twitter user Ryle Whittleson.
Oh, this is, you're just making all this
no,
up.
No, it says it right here. Twitter user Ryle Whittleson, who so far has the most normal name in the story, was quick to point out, now this guy you gotta like, because he is quick to point out that the math doesn't add up.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Does he have eyebrows?
Oh, it doesn't say. It does not say. Apparently, he says, some believe that Katy Perry is really JonBenet Ramsey. Despite being born 6 years before Ramsey, too many crazy people in the world, he tweeted on Friday to both of his followers. In the YouTube video posted by Dave Johnson, a photo of young Ramsey slowly transitions into a recent photo of Katy Perry, pointing out the strikingly similar facial features. Now, I know it's radio and people can't see it, but the fact that they have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth is uncanny, and beyond that, there's nothing going on.
Watch Black and White, the video from Michael Jackson, and watch people morph into each other.
Right.
I mean, you can do that with a computer in a second.
It is easy to morph.
Does that say that on your bumper sticker?
Yes. And I stand by that.
It's easy to morph.
It's easy to morph. The video has more than 180,000 views with a follow-up that
because
garnered nearly 12,000 additional hits. This guy's on fire. The theory comes on the heels of the internet buzzing as to whether or not presidential candidate Ted Cruz is in fact the same person as the Zodiac Killer. Now, why do they have to sully a good story like ChaBanet Ramsey becoming Katy Perry by mentioning something ridiculous like Ted Cruz is the Zodiac Killer? That's upsetting to me. Ted Cruz is the Zodiac Killer and Katy Perry is actually ChaBanet Ramsey, says Justin Prashuka, also on the Twitter. The internet is teaching us so much. So you have it. Try disputing this, Wendy. The similarities are incredible.
This is just disgusting, and I feel so sorry for Patsy, because really, just to die without knowing who the killer of her daughter is.
Or does she? Yeah, maybe she does.
And did you know that there's a documentary?
About the Ramseys?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did.
I might have to watch that.
I don't know the name of it.
Well, there's
the soundtrack by Katy Perry, because that would add fuel to Dave Smith's fire.
Dave Johnson. Will you get
fire.
His name right?
Well, some people call him Johnson.
These exotic names float right through me. I can't think
Dick
of who's
Johnson
who.
Is on the news.
Right, I know that. I don't know who's who beyond that.
And he's cousins with Pete Sack.
I think so. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I feel awful now because, as you've pointed out, all you need to do is hear about something that you used to be kind of... can I say obsessed with? You were obsessed with the ChaBanet Ramsey case, and now just in me bringing up the fact that she is now, as we have found out, ChaBanet Ramsey is now Katy Perry. That will reignite the flame for you, and I'm sorry.
You know, honestly, already I'm ready to watch New Revelations in Unsolved ChaBanet Ramsey Murder. CNN posted something a year ago with Ashley Banfield. There's a ChaBanet Ramsey... Now you've completely opened up this wound.
I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. Let's forget I ever mentioned it.
What was her brother's name? Blaine or Blair? And he was...
I can't remember his
allegedly
name. Yeah, he was a
suspect.
Top suspect for a little while.
And then there was a listener on hold who had said that the police department really kind of messed up that whole investigation.
Yeah. Here's a weird prediction, but I'm going with it. This O.J. Simpson thing is such a huge success for American Crime Story, and they have not. I don't think they've announced yet what season two will be. It'll be a different story, obviously. I think the ChaBanet Ramsey story is perfect for them. If they like that kind of story, if they like the O.J. Simpson trial and story, the ChaBanet Ramsey story is as twisted, if not more twisted, than the O.J. Simpson story.
I'm going to have to get out all her pictures, put them on the wall again, and try and
figure
out. Yes.
Do you draw lines?
I do.
Yeah.
I use red thread.
Oh, threads.
Around pins.
Yep.
I'm exaggerating there, but I am not kidding you. I am just completely obsessed with who killed ChaBanet Ramsey. I've been able to put it in the back of my mind for a while, but no, you bring it to the forefront right now.
It is so bizarre that they didn't solve it. Really, isn't it? It doesn't make sense that crime was not solved. Something that high profile, I don't understand it. And now she's Katy Perry.
What?
I know.
We really are trying to talk to this guy because, I mean, can you just put anything on the internet?
Burke Ramsey, by the way, was her brother.
Burke
Ramsey was the brother.
B-U-R-K-E.
Where did he end up? I don't remember the last time I heard anything about him.
He is Brand. Who's
He's
the guy?
Russell Brand?
Yes.
Is he now Russell Brand?
How weird
Brand?
Is that? It's incestual and weird.
I don't like it. I don't care for it.
See, now, seriously, I have to find out where are they now. I mean, when the O.J. Simpson story came back on, which tomorrow night, by the way, are you ready?
Yeah, another episode tomorrow, yes.
Worst show ever, and yet I can't wait for it.
Very addictive. As bad as it is, extremely addictive.
Just like Fuller House.
In a lot of ways.
But they did a Where Are They Now with, you know, the people of the real trial, like with Marcia Clark and all that.
Right.
I'm telling you that you're right with the ChaBanet Ramsey. That is going to be the next crime
story.
Wouldn't
that be perfect for them? It's got all
Except
the same
elements.
Except
they don't know how it turns out. That's the difference.
Yeah, I guess. That's the one problem there. Although we don't technically know how the O.J. Simpson thing turned out. We do, but we don't.
And that's what's funny when we're watching it with the kids and hearing my husband say to them, oh, my God, this guy is so guilty. I said, but we don't know that now in the story.
Right.
And no one believed it. And the kids are like, why? I said, because O.J. was the shizzle.
He was the. Say it again.
I have to be careful. So,
what was OJ?
The shizzle.
That's what he was.
Then. Everybody. Yep. I am embarrassed to say, and I've said this before. Orenthal James Simpson, number 32, played with the Buffalo Bills. Went to USC, University of Southern Cal. I did this whole like book report on him, mm-hmm. and my son Michael, who's in high school, said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "Because I just kind of idolized him. He was a great player."
Prior to that night, he was a hero.
And everybody, it's the juice.
Right.
Uncle Juice, as Robert Kardashian calls him.
The spikes that I wore for flag football, because I'm too delicate to play regular football.
Number
I played 32? Flag football. Well, he had his own brand of spikes called Orange Spot that were black spikes with, as you would imagine by the name, an orange spot where you tied the laces. And I got those just because they were O.J. Simpson spikes. I
didn't play real football. Them?
No, they're too small now. No.
I just loved that guy. He was amazing.
He was amazing.
He was. He was.
But then, after that night, he stopped being amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that just blows my mind, too, because when you think about it, some memorabilia show, he comes running in there with guns because somebody allegedly stole his stuff, and that's what he gets arrested for and goes to jail is still in jail?
I think eventually, because they were keeping an eye on O.J. Simpson, if anything bad happened, he was going to do some time.
Kind of not right. I know it's right that he's, and you know, the guy who's playing Ron Goldman's dad in this.
Yeah, I don't know who that actor
he's
is.
He's fantastic.
He looks just like him, though, doesn't he?
I mean, what a terrible story.
Yeah.
And
awful story.
And then I feel bad for Ron Goldman because, you know, he does get the backstory to this.
Right. Yeah.
God, I'm sucked into all these things. I hope they do JonBenet. JonBenet.
That would be a great second season for them.
And what was her name was from John Bennett, which is the dad.
Yeah. Yep.
It was a whole tragedy.
Yeah, I know.
Now you've opened the wound.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Has anyone on radio ever done a segment called Animal Stories? Because we should trademark this.
It's never been done before?
I don't think it's ever been done before, Animal Stories.
Can I call you Uncle Beal?
Yeah, that would be great. And I will refer to you as Buffy, Jody, and Mr. French, depending on my mood.
I want to be Mr. French.
All right, Steve is Mr.
French. Mr. French. He's got facial hair. I waxed.
He'll be Buffy and Jody. And Sissy sometimes, depending. All right, the first one, I don't really have this written down. This is just something Kevin found this morning. Our producer Kevin found this, and he showed it to me. And we watched it 6 times because we couldn't believe what we were looking at. Kevin, there must be a way we can get this on our Facebook page so people can see how ridiculous this is. I don't think you've seen this.
I haven't, but I heard you guys talking about it all over lunch.
Kevin, you describe what people will see when they visit our Facebook page. You will see the most aggressive rat in history,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, I mean, on the eyes, it's your standard street variety rat, but it's quite aggressive. He's trying to get into, it looks like, an urgent care facility or something like that, somewhere in the city. Was he injured? Maybe that's why, actually. That makes more sense. But he's very aggressive. He's jumping on a broom, and they keep, like, shoving him out the door, and he keeps running back in, and, you know, it's going on for, like, 30 seconds to a minute. I've never seen a rat act like that.
It doesn't fit the behavior of a rat. Usually a rat or a mouse, they do their best to scurry away. They don't want trouble. They just want to get out. You know, they want to move.
How long have you studied the mice or rats?
Oh, I've been a mouse and rat doctor for years. This is uncharacteristic.
Rat-a-tier.
This guy's got a broom, and he's like trying to hit the rat with the broom, and instead of the rat being afraid, the rat just keeps running up the broom. And then they try to close the door, and the rat's like holding it. No, I want to get in. I want to get in. And this goes on, like Kevin said, for at least 30 seconds.
He wanted to eat the guy because he was probably hungry.
That's all we can figure out. That's it.
Mentioning that in the like kind of credits of the video, she mentions that before she started videotaping this, the rat was jumping on this guy's leg and like squealing at him.
What's with that? Rats are supposed to be afraid of us. They're not supposed to want to kill us. I don't like this. This is a Chicago rat. In any other city, rats know the rules of rats. They're like, all right, you win. You're a human. I'm a rat. You win. Here in Chicago, they're fighting.
Okay, that guy deserves a medal.
You saw it, right?
I'm looking at it.
Look
yeah.
at that. What's? How is that possible?
How is that guy still doing? He's so calm, and the rat's climbing up his leg.
Every time the door is almost closed at this health facility, the rat, like with its paw, like puts its. Do rats have paws? What do rats have?
Yeah.
Rat paw?
Feet.
So, yeah. So, right? Oh. So puts his arm in the door, and his rat arm, it's like, oh, no, this one's not over. We're going round two. We're going round three.
Can you put it up? I'm on your Facebook page. That's where I'm seeing it.
All right.
Even after he finally gets the rat out and has the door shut, the rat's still trying to find ways to jump in.
Trying to find a way. The rat goes to the corner of the building, and he's scratching at it as if to say, I know there's a way I can get in to get in there and kill you. Rats aren't supposed to think that way.
Well, I mean,
we got to build walls around rats, Wendy.
It's tough.
Whoever
being
the next
a
president
rat.
Is, I hope we build a wall around all rats. All right. So if you haven't seen this yet, as great as we're trying to describe it, you need to see it for yourself. It's at our Facebook page, filed under Ornery Rat. Also, here's another story I hope you'll enjoy. Now, this we found this on Friday and we didn't get to this, sadly, but we're getting to it now. A Canadian man. This is a true story. This is from the Huffington Post. A Canadian man who smuggled 38 turtles in his pants.
Oh, yeah.
Has been given probation, a fine, has been banned from owning turtles for the next 10 years.
Well, that's a good thing for the turtles. They don't want to ride around in his pants.
What kind of turtles were they? Do you know?
Snapping.
Are they snapping?
Ouch!
According to Canada's Environmental Department, Dong Yan.
Oh, that explains it.
Explain that to me, Wendy.
Dong Yan of Windsor, Ontario, has tried to bring turtles from the United States into the southern part of the province. The turtles were contained in plastic bags and taped to Mr. Yan's legs. Yan was convicted on February the 17th after he was caught during an inspection. You know those turtle inspections they do at the border? You've gone from Detroit to Windsor, right?
Yes.
Or the other way? They're always looking for this sort of thing. During an inspection in 2014 when he tried to enter Canada through the Niagara border crossing. Jan's probation is for 2 years, and the fine was set at $2,600. He was sentenced to 50 years of community service and must notify the Environmental Department of International Travel. Jan can also be ordered to write a letter about his experience for publication as the department sees fit. What sort of weird punishment is that? All right, you can't have any turtles, and you need to write a letter about what you've just gone through. That's a weird add-on.
This is my favorite headline of 2016 so far.
No more turtles for Canadian who smuggled 38 turtles in his pants?
That's
the
one.
Headline.
All right, is he a big guy? Because unless they're little miniature turtles that you see in an aquarium, turtles are kind of big.
Well, I think my thought here is it was 38 separate times, not 38 turtles at once.
Well then,
That's my assumption.
Kevin, I'm reading it as he tried to smuggle in 38 turtles at the same
time. Where
are you
going to fit 38 turtles in your pants?
Turtles
on your leg, 38 snapping turtles
in your pants.
Dong Yan,
like Dong Yao.
Kevin, see if you can get Dong Yan for tomorrow.
Oh, that would
we want to chat.
My
with
pleasure.
Him. No turtles will be injured during tomorrow's show. I promise you.
Who puts turtles in their pants? I could see soft little kittens.
Yeah, even
but
then.
But turtles?
What do you? Forgive me for not knowing this, but is there some reason for the turtle smuggling? What are you getting out of this? They're just turtles, right?
I don't know what he's getting out of it. But
what's in it? Is it medicinal? I don't understand
why.
Well,
some turtles aren't available in the United States. There's
painted
turtles, box turtles.
But all right, let's say the law has determined that certain turtles are not in your best interest to own. Wouldn't you just agree to it and go, oh, well, if that's what it comes to, I don't want to have to write an essay like this, like Dong Yan has done.
Isn't he smuggling them in to sell them? I mean,
yeah.
if they're expensive, how many turtles did he have in his pants? I love this joke. How many?
He had 38 turtles in his pants.
All right, you know, $100 for each turtle.
No, all right, I guess it adds up. All right.
But all at once, that's like 37 too many.
You know what, though? That's the part that should be in the story. That's the most important thing is, did he do this on one trip or over a series of time? Because either way, it's weird to do it that many times, but...
You cannot fit 38 turtles in your pants.
Speak for yourself. You have no idea.
And I know they move slowly and all, but like, how do you keep them from...
Jiggling.
Yeah.
Did you just say 30... eight. What did you just say? Because it was like I don't know. 38 turtles. That's 37 too many. Is that what you just said? He's ignoring me now.
I didn't
now.
Hear him say that.
Okay, because that's weird.
I didn't hear Kevin say that.
He did.
Did he?
That's why he's answering phones right now. He goes, 38 turtles, that's 37 too many.
But we can agree that one turtle is too many.
Yes.
In your pants. I mean, if you just want to walk around with it and show it to people, all right, but...
The turtle? Are we still talking the turtle?
Yeah.
There's some turtle head joke there that
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. All right, we will take a quick break.
People want to talk turtles and rats.
Yeah, everybody's calling. 312.
I don't like turtles and rats.
312-981-7200. How many turtles can you put in your pants? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were just talking about rats.
Rats and turtles. It's animal stories.
Rats and turtles, rats and turtles.
So pretty.
First of all, this rat is not big at all. You guys are babies.
If that rat was coming at you, you would see it differently.
I would,
that's a big honking. I mean, there are much bigger rats, but just the mere fact that this is such an aggressive rat. If you haven't seen the video, again, it's on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. It's the rat that would not give up.
That I will agree with, but it's the size of like a domestic rat. Like when people have rats as pets.
Yeah.
Because all right, I've lived in the suburbs my whole life. I've not seen a lot of rats. When I started working downtown.
That's when the rats come out.
And they're like five times as big as this rat. It was a rat that jumped, a Chicago rat that jumped on a broom would break the broom.
Yep.
They're bigger than a Chihuahua. They're bigger than a small purse dog.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that big.
I know. Judge for yourself. Facebook, Bill Leff from Wendy Snyder. It's a rat that is just relentless. Ratlentless.
Hi, Dave.
Hello. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I was kind of surprised your producer didn't remember the movie Ben. Do you?
Sure.
Ben,
of course.
The two of us.
It's the sequel to Willard.
Yes.
That's right.
With
Lee
J. McCluskey, Willard, I believe.
Yeah, Willard trained them all to
attack.
Take out his enemies, and Ben was the boss rat.
Yep. Ben and Socrates Jackson, in the original. Those are the
Michael
two.
Michael Jackson thought enough of them to sing a song about it.
Yes,
I know,
did.
And the most beautiful song, I think, in the world, and
never,
it's about a rat.
Never written for a rat.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember it well.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. We appreciate that. Now on to turtles. How many turtles do you have in your pants, Ted?
None. In fact, that was one of the math corrections I wanted to kind of put out there, that if this was a snapping turtle, it's 37 too many. It's 38 too many.
Yeah, you don't want to have a snapping turtle in your pants.
Yow!
Not a chance. And on the subject of a rat, you know, I don't care how big it is compared to anyone you have. If they're coming at you, that thing is 10 feet tall, man.
Same with a mouse. I don't know. We've had problems with mice in our house.
Yeah.
And when they come at you, they're just so fast.
See, in the video that's on our Facebook page, they're kind of playfully with a broom trying to scoop it out of the building. But I said to Wendy, I know this sounds horrible, but I would not be playfully scooping it out of the building. I'd be trying to end it.
Yeah, there'd be some point where you just got to eliminate the threat. Then again, the rat may be like, man, let me in this place. I need some medication. I just found out that Katy Perry is terrible.
Bye, Ted. Hang up on yourself.
He tied all of our stories in.
Good.
He should
be hired.
That's well done.
All right, Brian. Turtle talk.
Listen, about that guy smuggling turtles from the U.S. into Canada.
Yes.
Sounds like an Asian name, right?
Dong Yan, more times than not, is of Asian descent, yes.
Well, you know, in Asia, they like turtle soup, right?
I think
I
turtle
don't
soup
know
is
if
like
it's just an Asian
in a lot
delicacy.
Of places. Yeah, it's in a lot of places.
Well, I mean, I think it's more so there, but and since he's coming from that country, maybe Canada doesn't want to have turtle soup up in their country.
That's possible. Sadly, bro, we don't know the turtle laws of our neighbors to the north. I wish I knew more about the turtle soup laws of Canada, but someday
really?
I hope to.
I would like to know that myself.
All right.
But listen, in response to Wendy, do they have rats that are domesticated that I can bring to my house? And
well, yeah, they sell them at pet shops.
They
really?
Do. Yeah, they
yeah,
have
absolutely.
Those.
You can get hamsters, gerbils, ferrets, rats, mice.
Caribou.
I didn't know they had caribou.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Kira Caribou. She's my favorite DJ. Mm-hmm. All right, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
The donger needed food.
Yeah,
Turtle soup.
You know, when Dong Yan gets an urge for something, a craving for something, he doesn't care about laws. He just wants to feed his stomach.
Tony, do you have a clarification?
Yes, I read the story this weekend, and it said it was 38 turtle eggs, not turtles, but turtle eggs. But I'd also like Bill to know I'm driving my car right now with 53 hummingbirds in my pants, and I'm getting a hummer.
Oh, hang up on yourself,
you, Tony.
Too, Tony.
That's valuable information to know. I'm embarrassed and proud at the exact same time. How does that happen? Usually you could be one or the other, but no, I'm both embarrassed and proud of him.
Yeah, baby turtles. I've seen ones that can fit into the palm of your hand. How do they stay in your pants?
Oh, that's the secret. Nobody knows. That's a mystery. We had, you know, when I was growing up, I was the same way that I am now in terms of pets. I didn't want a pet. And my parents,
but your dear sweet mom wanted to change your view on animals, didn't she?
That was her goal, was to make me love pets. So we had a constant stream of every kind of animal you could possibly imagine.
Old McBilly had a farm.
It really was like that.
L-E-F-F-F.
Two F's. Oh. Leave off the last F for favings. So at some point we had a turtle.
That's an inside joke there.
We had a turtle, and it was ridiculous because I didn't want a turtle. Nobody in my family wanted a turtle, but we had
turtles
one.
Turtles are fun.
How? What's fun about a turtle?
You could have turtle races.
You could put them in your pants.
I guess.
Will you stop it? I know what we're getting him for his birthday.
A turtle?
Yeah.
Or a pair of pants.
Get me a turtle.
A pocket turtle.
I don't want a pocket turtle. I don't. It smelled.
Didn't Alanis Morissette sing about
that?
Yeah,
she sang a song like that. It smelled so awful in the room.
They don't smell.
This one smelled terrible.
Well, give it a bath.
No.
It's kind of interesting to see. You don't think it's cool to see them stick their heads in and out of the shell? They have a house on their back.
All right, once you do that, though, then what do you have?
You watch it again.
The head went in, the head went out. Let's move on. What else do you have for me, Mom and Dad? What other animal can you give me that I can't stand? It was, they were just like every 6 weeks they'd bring in something and they'd go, look, a porpoise. And I go, I don't want a porpoise. Well, try it. You might enjoy a porpoise.
Where did you keep the porpoise?
We didn't have a porpoise. I made that one up.
What? Kevin, your ideas, you're going to have to hang up on yourself.
What's your idea, Kev?
Well, I don't have to say it, I feel like.
No, say it. You're all right.
Pants, maybe? I don't know.
No, I'm not keeping it in my pants.
All right, Nick DiGilio, I hope you have that because we are featured prominently on your Out of Context.
All right.
I'm going to send that in to Nick. What time was that?
There's no prizes, Wendy. You don't have to send
2:56?
Whatever.
I'm sending that in.
Rowan Anna will be in next. It doesn't matter. Rowan Anna will be in next.
Not going to keep it in my pants.
They've got a real show planned for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.